Hey everybody, welcome to Pittsburgh Comics Podcast number 40. We have a big group here tonight, so hopefully everybody can get heard. We're at a double wide table. It is. Lots of stuff to talk about, so we'll introduce everybody going around the table here. I don't have to introduce it. This is cool.
Yeah,
I'll just say calling in from Cleveland. But I'm Colin McMahon, owner of Pittsburgh Comics, and to my left is...
Crawling in from Cleveland.
I'm on your right.
Adam Russell.
There you go.
Matt Lizzle.
Jeremy Dan.
Ryan Sargent.
Chad Ramston.
Sean Wheatley.
Chris Chance Brown.
And this is Nick Borelli.
Live.
In person.
With a big bottle of something. a little scared about
Coca-Cola
that.
Coca-Cola soft drink.
Yeah, sure it is. Okay.
Perfectly non-alcoholic.
Are you drinking that out of the bottle?
Yeah, why not?
There's glasses in the...
So you berated bathroom. Us and then you're not even going to share?
Oh, it's moving around.
Oh, yeah.
That's how you know who's talking. They have the bottle.
I'm mouth sharing a bottle with this table tonight. Great.
Yeah. Welcome to that.
You've done worse. You've done worse, Sean.
That's a whole other podcast.
I was going to say.
So is this how this works? Are you guys still recording? Is this stuff that gets edited normally?
No. There's no editing. I do zero editing.
Nice.
Oh, man.
This is wrong.
The only editing I do is on the red shoe ones just because there's with the stops and starts.
Red shoe?
Red chair.
Do you edit it to say the shoe out of it? Do you edit chair into it?
I do, yes.
That's every Saturday, everybody. Red chair.
It is. Don't Nick worry. Calls in from Cleveland because he can't always be here.
Yeah.
Although you could drive down. It's not that far.
I get back to work, but let's talk about comic books. Or Saved by the Bell, your choice.
Oh. No, I do believe you guys maximize the Saved by the Bell category.
To the max.
Yeah.
To the max.
No more shriek.
We should probably stop.
Oh, boy.
Thank you.
There we are.
I'm going to pass. I know one of the things you guys want to talk about, I was gone last week, and I was down in Dallas for the Comics Pro meeting, which is very cool. Mostly it's just like a big, I don't want to say meet and greet, but it's like one-on-one with all the different publishers. They send either a lot of times it's the actual creators, like Terry Moore was there promoting his stuff. But you also got the sales guys. Mostly it was the sales guys from all the companies. Although we did have the president of Valiant was there also helping hype his stuff.
How is that coming along? People seem like they're interested.
It's kind of hard to tell. sorry. Passing a bottle around the table. Classy. They're hyping it a lot. The big thing he said was that they want Valiant used to be number three, so they want him to be number three again.
Wow.
So why don't they put anything on their website? I've been to that website. Really cool. I signed up, put my email in, and there's still nothing up there.
I don't know.
Bleeding Cool has more stuff,
yeah, I agree
more pictures of what's going on in the Valiant offices than...
No, I mean, I wish him well, but that's a little bold.
It's a humble goal.
Well, it's a humble goal, but I mean, you're looking at an image, but just they're talking about they're going to, for the first 4 months, you're going to have one book a month.
That's cool.
Release one new number one and have then, you know, number two of the other book come out. But I'm like...
Put all the marketing on a book every month. That's
right, rather than flooding, like, that's what got CrossGen into trouble. It came out with too many books too quickly, but... To match just Image's title output, I don't think they're going to be able to beat Walking Dead with all four books.
Are you talking about CrossGen the first time or the second time?
Was there a second time?
Well, there was the first time.
Bottom.
Right, that was kind of a flash in the pan.
Yeah, that was I think, a let's keep the copyrights on the books. We got
in 2001 at the Chicago Con, I was there, and CrossGen was like at its peak. And they had a booth the size of Marvel and DC.
Yeah, it was huge.
Obnoxiously huge. So they put some money behind that stuff.
They actually had some pretty decent books. Like, Way of the Rat was really good.
I like Bruce.
Yeah. I remember a lot of people at the shop buying them. People seemed to like them. But it was one of those, like, bizarre things where they burned out as quickly as they came. It was like, they're huge, gone.
They tried to do a bullpen, and they tried to do a lot of, like, progressive things or maybe old-school things.
Right. The other thing they did, I think they tried to make it a one universe. I think Valiant's doing this, too, where the books are going to work in. Where I think where Image now versus Image before is working is it's just this book and this book and this book, and you don't have to read them all to understand what's going on.
Didn't they actually fail by one of those, like, Josh Blaylock, Devil's Due kind of things where people were owed money and, like, all of a sudden, the money disappeared.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, just like Dreamwave and...
Yeah.
That makes sense. Oh, man.
Papa!
Hey, buddy.
What's going on?
Come on.
The table's getting bigger.
See? I'm glad we did this.
Nice to meet
this
you,
Nick.
Sure.
This is Justin. Oh, and just... new Papa Justin just arrived.
How you doing?
nothing is more like exciting, thrilling, and terrifying all at the same time.
Well, like it's better every day.
Some of us have been there, so it's going to be okay. We promise.
Exactly.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
I would be scared too.
But it was just very.
But I can always call Sean and ask him.
I haven't broken mine yet.
I have two. Hey, I have two. Then we haven't broken yet. So messed up a little, but we haven't broken. The dog's doing well too. But it's just it's a neat one-on-one, and more stuff goes on. I mean, at the actual meeting, the actual organized stuff this year was a lot less interesting than last year. And it was interesting. We were some retailers were talking. Most of the stuff goes on at the bar after or at the meals. But we were talking last year. I think everybody was a little hungrier, a little more scared, and we didn't know what was going on still. You had Fear Itself hadn't started. We had no idea what Flashpoint was that we were ordering, and they're showing us buttons, and we're going, what are these buttons? We had no idea. So there was a lot more, I don't want to say tension, but anxiousness, whereas this year we're just a lot calmer. Everything's going very well. And so the urgency wasn't there. What are you doing to help us? Like the DC panels, honestly, last year they did a whole day. This year they only did half a day. And it was just really boring. And we were just kind of sitting there. We spent an hour and a half going over that survey. I don't know if anybody read it online.
Heard about it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
It was this dumbest thing ever. They did the survey week four that the number ones came out. They did in-person interviews in like five comic shops on a Wednesday, and the data told them that comic fans are avid. Comic fans in shops are avid buyers. Really, on a Wednesday, I'm shocked.
Was there like some weird thing where like half of them didn't even make it back to DC or something like that?
That I don't know about that. And then they did an online one where the sample size was 5,000. Yeah. And I'm like, that's mighty small for an online survey. I know 10 people did it here in my store themselves, let alone to the entire online community. So I thought that was a little small sample size. And then the other group was people who had bought a digital comic from them. They emailed directly and asked if they would like to buy a digital comic, which is...
Yeah, we have.
Yeah, it's like, you know, would you buy any of these?
I'm good with the one I bought.
So we're just looking, and I'm just looking at this data isn't realistic in any way. And so their findings were, you know, they're like, we found this, and you'll be excited to know that people who bought this book that day are likely to buy number two. It's like, but they haven't read it. So I just found the whole thing.
Yeah.
And you're sitting there for an hour and a half as they're going over each set of numbers. I'm like, a handout would have been great, and I could have ignored it like I'm doing. So that was bad. But then I'm not a super outgoing guy, as most comic book people are. And so I wouldn't want to, you know, go sit with someone that I want to talk to, just being, you know, not wanting to do that.
Right.
Well, I know you are.
I do networking for a living. So.
Right. But I'm just saying, you know, you see Dan DiDio sitting at a table, I wouldn't go up and sit next to him. I wouldn't want to impose that.
I would talk to him about Reboot.
There you go.
And how much I love that show.
Well, you could do it. He'd probably be excited to talk about that.
Yeah, probably would be, because it would be like, you're not talking to me about what you don't like. Great. Right.
But what I had a habit of doing is I would go and I'd just sit at a table all by myself and see who landed there. And because it was always very interesting. And sitting with a couple guys, and all of a sudden Brian Hibbs come walking over with this lady, which was great. You know, I'm Brian Hibbs. He's a cool guy. I don't know who she is. And she sits down and introduces herself as Karen Berger, which was...
Wow.
There you go.
God! You know, I try not to be starstruck at these things. You know, Jim Lee, nice guy and everything, but it wasn't, it's Jim Lee.
Karen Berger is like an insider's wow.
Oh, you know, exactly.
Like, not like your, like, dabbler's wow. Like, a dabbler would be like, oh, Jim Lee, wow, that's amazing. But Karen Berger, like, I would be like, my jaw would drop.
Yeah.
Especially of all the people, she sat down next to you.
Exactly.
No. You didn't tell us that part. That makes an even better story.
Well, yeah. So,
unthreatening.
Yeah.
That's fair.
But so we had a great conversation. She's really excited about these new books. The new ones that, if you guys got the preview last week, her favorite is the Voodoo Child one. And she's also really high on the new Dial H for Hero.
Oh, very cool.
And
that sounds like a really good book.
So it was neat because I hadn't read the preview, but they gave us a little, at the end of their meetings, gave us a bag with, you know, the swag in it, and in it was a copy of that. So I was able to read it before dinner, and then DC sponsored a free bar. You know, that makes people want to attend.
Sure.
And getting in line, she came up and walked, and she's like, did you, and I said, I had a chance to read it and talked about it, and it was all very, very cool. And then, like, at dinner, Vince Letario sat next to me. Vince is, Bob Wayne is the head of DC sales. Vince is his right-hand man for 20 years. And we were just chatting, and I asked about why Rob Liefeld was getting 3 books, and he bounced his head off the table going, I don't know why. I told them not to. And he pointed to Bob Harris and said, go ask him. And Bob Harris, if you've ever seen him, scary. Not a tall man.
Yeah.
And a very angry-looking man.
Yeah.
And, you know, kind of like, you know, a terrier or pit bull type thing. And I'm like, I don't think I'm not going to go up and ask him anything. No. Yeah. But Vince.
Bob Wayne is a guy that I would be intimidated to talk to, too, because he gets some of the hard questions.
He does.
And he's prepared for the hard questions. Oh, yes. So, you know, he's going to be on the defense instantly.
Yeah. But so he's really, and Vince, I'm like, you know, some of these books are out of print. He's like, here's, you know, and we're not going to go back. And he pulls out of his briefcase all of their sales figures. And he says, this is what we go through every week to see what we need to get back into print, what the sales velocity is, how many we've sold, you know, that kind of stuff. And then he showed me, like, you know, if we made a mistake on this. I think he showed me, like, Army at Love. They have, like, 70 years worth of books in stock because they way overprinted on them.
Right.
But it was just really neat talking to somebody. You know, he was just that forthcoming. He pulled out next month's previews pages. He was showing me stuff.
I listened to last week. He did a podcast with John Suntress on the Word Balloon podcast, and he was talking about this retailer summit and what he was prepared. They were prepared for, you know, they're always prepared for the worst. They don't know, they're going to deal with people that are essentially their clients, and they have rare opportunities to, you know, be face to face with them. And they were both very optimistic about the fact that they thought that there was really not going to be a lot of, you know, feedback that was going to be fairly negative. Like, they think they were doing what they could. Did you feel that there?
Yeah, it was all very positive. Yeah. Everybody was very happy with them.
They were scared, they said, that they've ever been. Like, they knew that they were
It's been...
Post the numbers.
It's been hugely successful for everyone. And that was really the talk, you know, every retailer, you know, so how's it doing for you? Great. You know, the new 52 has just been through the roof for everybody. So,
who else did you see there?
Like, David Gabriel from Marvel was there. I'll get to that later.
Anybody I know?
Anybody? Oh, yeah. Well, yes. Now, at the breakfast on Friday, I think it was Friday, all of a sudden I'm, again, sitting at a table by myself, and this very dapper gentleman comes walking over. It's funny. I was sitting with the Earth 2 guys, Cardiangelo and his two flunkies, who never left him. It was very funny. They were like two little puppy dogs the whole time running around with him. But Jermaine Exum of Acme Comics down Greensboro. In Greensboro, North Carolina. And I'm like, real quick, I Facebook message Sean. I'm like, I'm having breakfast with Jermaine. So he told me to give him a sloppy kiss. I'm like, he didn't like it. He didn't respond well to that.
Short of that.
Yeah. But really nice guy. It was neat. Later, we were at the bar.
Was my store before I came here because I was working for a company in High Point, North Carolina. So the closest comic shop was Acme Comics in Greensboro. So that became the place I hung out on Wednesdays and tortured their staff and bothered their customers and their locale for over a year. I've done one of the podcasts that they do, but...
While you were one of our customers, you actually cheated on
us. I cheated on this podcast.
There's no cheating. Yeah. Spread the wealth.
I see another one too, I'll admit it. It was a comics.
Whoa.
It's done now. It's gone.
Come on.
Now that
you did it too.
It's on the internet forever.
Well, he's allowed it. So.
Yeah, the internet never forgets.
But Jermaine and his store, they it's similar to here in spirit with it. There's a core group of customers that are regulars in addition to the extended family, very community-oriented.
He's telling me about his free comic book day.
It's insane. Is something to behold down there. It is a freaking con, and now they got people camping out overnight.
Seriously.
And it goes... Well, they have to rent tents and things to put it out in the parking lot. And they have artists and people doing sketches.
Raising the bar, Colin.
Okay. Actually, I was talking about a guy doing radio remotes. I had no idea how cheap they were. So I might try to do something like that.
To the radio.
But that would still be pretty cool to have the radio van out there. And you know.
It's not 1998, Colin.
But it would still be cool. So what? It would be cool.
For that 30 seconds.
You'd get foot traffic. People would be like, oh my gosh.
What's going on there?
Radio.
You never drove around to find which gas station the DJ was giving away free gas at?
Exactly. The last time I slept out in the parking lot was 1999, and it was for the Phantom Menace, and I'll never do that again.
No, but ran into Jermaine, so that was very cool. But yeah, the big guys, like the guys from, and just about everybody was there. Just about every publisher that of note, the only ones I can think of that weren't there were, I don't think Oni was there.
Blue Water
wasn't there. And Drawn and Quarterly and Fantagraphics, but really beyond that,
was Brian Hitch there?
Yeah, Hibbs was there. I had lunch with him. Now, what you weren't here, but I had lunch with him and Karen Berger.
Do people hit up Brian Hibbs like all the time?
Yeah.
Do people like want to? I mean, he's like.
No, not people there. But yeah. When I first got there and I saw him in the bar, yes, I spent a lot of time in the bar, which is bad because I'm not a drinker, so it. I'm not good in that situation. But I said, "Hey, Brian, I'm good to see you." My customers were asking how many famous retailers I was going to see, and he just laughed.
Because he's the famous retailer.
Right, he is, and he acknowledges that, but he doesn't like that title.
Sure.
He feels, you know, no, I'm not the voice of every retailer.
He's de facto.
He is, wants it or not. Based on what he's done.
You go to the store.
Yeah, if you've been to his store, it's incredibly disappointing.
Oh, I've been there. I was on my honeymoon.
It's
that's
the size.
Where you go on your honeymoon, right?
It's less
San Francisco, and I.
It's less than half of this room.
Yeah, me too.
So about extra bedrooms too.
About I don't know. I was underwhelmed with.
Yeah.
But again, was that because I had extra retailing expectations when I went in there?
I did too.
You seem like you hit a lot of comic shops. So
but Sean, it wasn't
yeah.
even experience. Sean, it wasn't even to me about him or anything. It was the selection was disappointing.
I mean, Gary down in Morgantown. You walk in the door, you're greeted. You can chat if you want, or they'll leave you alone and let you dig through books if you want.
Yeah.
If you want to talk about something, the people are well-read and well-versed and generally positive and happy to be there and doing
what
they're doing.
Is that the store on High Street?
Yes.
Okay.
I will say
unlike
the time...
here, where Colin has me to, you know...
Your personal shopper will go around the store with you.
I will
you,
say
the
one time I was there,
class customer. It,
yes. If your name is Jack, he'll
was,
go around with you.
He was berating Image on the phone, so that was kind of entertaining to hear him just berating a publisher on the phone.
I find that interesting. I mean, I would never do
bite
that.
The hand that feeds.
No, well, not even that so much.
The other way around.
It's not that, you know, why would I call Image and yell at them? I think it was about a barcode or something you said. It was
it
like.
Was some trade dresses and barcodes. I don't remember what it was.
Yeah, it's like, you know, now you're just throwing your weight around because you are the famous retailer.
Well, Colin, you need to start writing an article for. Comic book news.
Yeah, I'll blog more and then somebody will pick it up.
At?
Yeah.
Hey, but it does
red chair dialogue.
So it does prove there's space for different.
It's red shoe. Oh wait, no, chair.
Red, red shoe. Red shoe. That there's space for different types. You know, there's different. You know, just as comic book fans run the spectrum of all kinds of different types of people.
Yeah.
Different retail is going to appeal to different types. So he's.
Yeah,
you know,
it's funny because
been there in that location for a long time. He's making a living doing it. People ask for his opinion.
He probably has very loyal customers. Exactly. As most of places do.
And he's seen it all, too. And it's funny how cyclical, because I've read his books before I opened. It was one of those things where I wanted to know what I didn't know. Mm-hmm. So I got his books, or he just had the one at the time, and read it, and you know, just to see what I needed to know. So, and it's funny, when I do read his articles and stuff, 99% of the time I agree with him. You know, people argue with him. It's like, no, but... you don't understand the point he's trying
wrong.
To make.
You know, sometimes the way he does it is...
He's far more brash. Yes,
right.
His tact needs
but,
a little
but
polishing.
He gets attention, and he's Brian Hibbs because he's Brian Hibbs.
Yeah. And I think in the industry, doing what you guys do, you almost have to be like that to...
There's no union. You know, you kind of
right.
need
Well, that's kind of... That's about the most this is.
Right.
You know, it's just trying to get a common voice.
Huh. Do you pay a membership for comics?
Yeah, there's it's a membership. You pay to go to the meeting.
So it's a select...
Yeah, you have to. But, I mean, anybody's welcome.
Opened,
I think
it's
I don't,
opened any shop.
Right. I think they just started doing online people.
Hmm.
I'm not positive on that.
But you have to be a retailer.
Are they there?
You have to,
like,
yeah.
Do you have to have a Diamond account or something?
I don't know.
The big.
Boy, if the online retailers were there, I bet you they would get flack.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's probably
DCBS, because they have a shop that I know they're there. They were there last year. Yeah. They have a shop somewhere.
Could I sign up and get an account?
Yeah, so they're out of, yeah.
Or do you have to have a Diamond account?
Yeah, I think you have to... You have to have something.
Okay.
Yeah, but they do. They invite anybody to the meeting.
Yeah,
they're allowed to come.
I live in Muncie,
I think so.
About
or at least
away,
non-members
so
are allowed to come. So I don't
Actually,
know.
We're all
just anybody.
Yeah, let's
give me a tour.
Group trip. We're in.
Well, I guess they have the warehouse and then they have the brick and mortar store.
Crazy.
We should rent a party bus and go next year.
Yeah.
Party bus. I don't know where it's going to be. No.
Wasn't it in Dallas 2 years in a row?
Yeah, they do it 2 years in a row and then they pick another place. First 2 years were in Memphis. This was Dallas.
If it's East Coast, we're renting a party.
No, they try to do it somewhere central. They try to make it central so it's easy for everybody.
Most of us here aren't retailers, though. I don't know how that would work.
Right, so I don't think...
Oh, we could strap the Incredible Hulk to your
posse.
I'm sure
it's an anyone.
You could roll in with a crew.
But if y'all show up, we're all going to give you weird looks.
No, I don't think...
I call not turtle.
There we go.
I would like to be E.
We started this conversation.
Oh, are we talking about Entourage? Or?
No.
Walter Roy, black suit, sunglasses, little earpieces.
Yeah,
colors, protective detail.
I'm used to
publishing
that,
wise, big that came out because I saw a couple news stories from Comics Pro.
Okay.
Is there anything?
Nothing really big. It's not the show where like the normal like Diamond
right.
Summits where they're saying here's what's coming up in 3 months
yeah.
and here's our publishing plans. It wasn't that. Because I think honestly everybody's like no, don't do that. We can go to that and
right.
get it. We don't want to be foonsped a PowerPoint presentation of the Diamond previews. That's not what
this
we're here
for. This is
more
about the retailers than
yeah.
about the
yeah.
So it's more
yeah.
about you guys coming together.
Right, like
so
they had a panel discussion with
from
all...
From a business point, what
right.
works and what
yeah.
doesn't.
One of the discussions that where they had all the publisher reps up on the dais, I don't know, there were 10 of them, mm-hmm. but, and it was basically, our question was, what are you doing to promote print?
Okay.
Because so much talk the previous year had been digital, it had
mm-hmm.
almost been all digital, and it was funny, someone started talking about digital, and they had open mics, and you could stand up to ask a question, and the guy
right.
said, okay, who here wants to talk about digital? You know, looking around the room, and nobody raised a hand, he's like, okay, enough
right.
digital, please.
Because
they put the big fear into us last year, digital,
right.
that's all we talked about, and it's like, okay, it's a year later,
nothing's really
happened.
Changed.
Yeah. Nothing's
yeah.
changed.
And that was something else that I thought was funny, is that was another one of the stories that came out on the comic websites was Diamond was saying they're going to start doing their digital thing. But
we heard about
it
last year.
Yeah, and that
yeah.
was really all they said. And that's
yeah.
what I wanted to say was like, so what was the point of announcing again?
Yeah.
They haven't really said anything.
Yeah. Their thing looks neat, but again, I don't know if it's going to have any impact
mm-hmm.
or anything.
I mean, I appreciate it because they said that they want to actually like get you guys into it, you know, make it more of a...
Right,
you can
right.
Go,
it, it, basically, it's kind
of
neat. The way they're doing is we're going to get an app for
yeah.
my store.
Right.
And you click on that. So whereas the way Comixology works, it's a disaster for us, where you have to go through
yeah.
a computer,
right.
download it to the computer, then transfer it to your device
mm-hmm.
and stuff.
It's a work through. It's not
yeah.
what it's designed for.
Yeah.
If I'm going to get digital comics, I want to get them from you.
Right.
Well,
thank
yeah.
you.
You know,
you
or you
and everybody should do that.
And that's when I was excited
yeah.
because
we're
they
free.
Said that.
Oh.
Nice!
Well, that's why I was excited, because when they brought it up online, and
yeah.
They said that they want to really integrate the storefronts.
And it looks really good.
Yeah.
yeah,
so well, that's good.
That's great. I mean, that's what digital doesn't yeah. have is a sales force.
And the Diamond, well, not the Diamond Digital guy, the Iverse guy is
right.
great.
Yeah.
It was funny talking to him, because he said he saw the problem,
mm-hmm.
and he didn't know how to make the stores work into the storefront thing they had until he realized, well, gosh, if I get rid of the storefront thing,
yeah.
that solves all the problems. So it was nice to see that he was actually listening.
Right.
Whereas the Diamond guy, I couldn't stand. So, sorry. He sat next to me at the last lunch, and Eric Stevenson of Image, the publisher of Image, was making a real nice speech,
mm-hmm.
and he's sitting there making all these little comments, you know, like, you're not going to be around much longer. Yeah, print stupid.
Oh,
I'm just sitting here going, am I not
yeah.
sitting here? You know,
for a publisher to do that.
Yeah. Well, it wasn't a publisher. It was a distributor, and
distributor,
his opinion,
yeah.
he's of the opinion of, if you want it, you got to go through me.
Okay.
So... I can say whatever I want. Where I'm sitting here going, I don't have to push it at all. And,
was he from Diamond?
Yeah, he was Diamond.
Well,
I
course.
Don't
he
like
was,
him.
He can make more money.
He's well. The thing is, they had a 4-page PowerPoint presentation. They do these little round tables. We call it speed dating. You sit at 10 minutes with each table. I think there were like 28 of them. So you know you can only sit for a little bit and you move on. And he had a laptop facing away from him in a 4-page PowerPoint presentation. He couldn't work it. You know, just with the pad, he couldn't.
Right.
It's like, oh great, you're the digital guy, and you can't even.
work
it. You Sorry, can't even work a computer, so it was not very, very
so were
exciting.
There any big announcements that I
No, there were no big announcements. DC really didn't talk much about Watchmen, other than, I mean, they talked about it, but we don't know dates, we don't know when it's coming, they still haven't figured out the exact shipping dates when it's coming.
The point of view that we have yet to hear, at least in a loud way, is that what... comic shops think about this Watchmen, because I would imagine
yeah.
it would be pretty positive.
What the only question they asked at their roundtable was, what do you think you will order Minutemen at? And that was a very interesting question, and I think I was right with everyone else, and everybody said about Green Lantern numbers.
Oh, so you comparison. So
yeah, comparison.
Percentages.
And because he's like, he knows Rorschach's going to be crazy. I'm like, yeah, Rorschach will be Batman numbers. But he's like, you know, here's a middle of the line one, Minutemen.
That's Darwin Cook.
Darwin Cook. Yeah.
Doing
so.
I think so.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's writing and drawing it. And so I think the consensus of everybody was Green Lantern numbers. So
that's respectable.
Yeah.
I mean, another
that's big.
A book like that on the marketplace that doesn't exist is something that's got to make all this other noise kind of. Sort of not matter.
Yeah.
So Green Lantern numbers, is that top 5 seller for you? Top 10?
Probably top 5.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, that's one of, what, how many books?
Six or seven.
It was a one-shot.
That's
Now, you really think you'll do Batman numbers? I mean, because that's going to be
on
your
best seller.
On Rorschach, yes, absolutely. Yeah. Rorschach, that's definitely. The
Lemire Mayhew.
Absolutely. Is that everybody here's big book that they're waiting for?
I'm more excited for the Minutemen.
Me too. Minutemen's my book for me.
And then when Darwin they release that cover today, or that art?
Yeah, the art from last night.
It looks awesome.
I like Minutemen. I sort of want to see what Brian Azarzell is going to do with Comedian. Just because I know that...
It's a character that fits him.
Yeah, it does. But I don't
know. Yeah, J.G. Jones art on that. Yeah. So, yeah. Oh, I mean, they're all going to be big. So, we're hoping that they'll make it, you know, like they did with the New 52, make it returnable.
Right.
Yeah. As long as we order X amount, and we'll order it.
They made it returnable, man.
It'd be the safest bet. In...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Exactly. Exactly. Sure. But it's, you know, give me that cushion. Yeah. Let me order, you know, 150 copies and not worry that I'm, you know...
You'll have one team on your you know, one group on your team, no problem.
Yeah. So am I the only one that's going to wait for the omnibus?
No, not at all. I think the trades are going to sell great, too, because this is one...
Evergreen.
This was what I was trying to explain to somebody. It's like, I mean, they're like, well, it's not going to sell like Watchmen. I'm like, no, but that guy that came in for Watchmen, and all of a sudden this comes out, and they say, I hear there's more, and I have another book to sell them.
Yeah, of course.
They're going to be thrilled.
That's an automatic price.
They try, you know, so...
Because prior to that, what did you say? Like, what do you read next? I'm like, well, that's the end of superheroes, so...
yeah. You can try this, or maybe this. I mean, but yeah, this is a definite...
Maybe they can bring back that... What's next after Watchmen?
Absolutely.
Because what's next after Watchmen? Oh, here's some Batman. What's next after Watchmen?
Before.
How about
what if they, give me a book with 4-page preview of every book, and I give that to everybody?
And, and, you know, like you were saying, Evergreen, Nick, you're going to have the people that buy it in issues because they can't wait, which is probably most of us. And then a lot of us will probably buy it as a trade
for sure
to have that nice thing that you can put on your bookshelf. And then they'll release the omnibus later, the absolute. And it's going to be like...
There you go.
That's been the thing with DC. Like, they released... like you just said, they would shuttle it off to singles, trades, and omnibus. But, like, that's exactly what they did with
New
52.
And the one thing they do so well that I love is that
New 52 omnibus was just a thing.
They're so much better at getting us to double dip because of the way they spread it apart.
Yeah. Of course,
Because, because they'll do the issues...
File them away. You don't want to find them again.
There might be like some type of collection, either hardcover or softcover, that'll come out kind of right away.
Yeah.
But then that sweet, deluxe, oversized, absolute will be like a year, year and a half later, where it's just been long enough that you're like, man, I want to read that again. And here it is in this gorgeous format. Like,
bundled with scripts and Alan Moore rants.
with the quotes from Alan Moore. I want this not to exist.
Oh my God. Proposal,
Anything with Darwin Cook and Absolute, just it's an automatic sell for me.
Yeah.
And it's,
did you get the Parker?
Yes.
Martini?
Yes, I did.
That New Frontier is...
Oh, that was like, and I already had the two... books.
I think
the extra material in that is amazing too.
Well, I think his New Frontier is absolutely
perfect. Oh yeah, of course. Perfect. Like that was my first absolute. Like as soon as I found out like Darwin Cook has sketches, has back material, and it's all in the oversized, and that's beautiful. Like as an artist, which I hate bringing that up, but as an artist, like the sketch material, the scripts, all that stuff, $100. That's an easy sell. That's just damn easy. I'm sorry.
Why do you apologize?
It's on my shelf. It sounds like Christmas 2013 or 2012.
Yeah. I just said, don't apologize.
Or do you not have it now? Is this your cry for it?
What? Oh, no, he said he has.
Oh,
I've got it.
Oh, you want it?
Yeah, I actually, it was between me and another comic artist in Erie, and that was my point of pride. Like, I bought that before he did.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so, I mean, hey, that brought you here, so...
What, Watchmen?
Yeah.
Yeah, locking it in my room. I couldn't get it. I had to finish it before the movie.
Yeah. You know, and what did we sell last week? We sold a copy of Watchmen, you know, that I hadn't sold in a long time.
It's been since the 80s.
Well, because, I mean, when the movie came out, it was so saturated.
Yeah.
And I figure everybody in the world had bought it. Mm-hmm. We have more people.
And that Sunday I was down here.
Yeah. So it's, I mean, there's still people out there that haven't read it. So now we're giving them, you know, and they're going to say, oh, there's more? Great. You know, you know, I understand the people upset, you know, why mess with it and stuff. I totally understand that. Yeah. But why not?
Trump. I mean, if people want something, guess what? Your book is just going to be just as good as it was before. If you don't want to read it, don't read it. Your other book's going to be great.
Yeah. But also, look at Bob Wayne, okay, or even Dan DiDio. You know, my job's on the line if I don't sell a certain amount of books and make so much money. I can make how much money putting this out?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to money. You
right,
make money,
and I'm not going to do it because Alan Moore wishes I was dead, and I'm not doing it in deference
way,
to him.
Either way, he wishes
would
you were dead.
Yeah,
either
exactly.
Way. I mean, so you're out. You're
and,
out.
And it's not, you know, it's like what we were saying when they announced it. It's not like they have hacks working on this.
Yes. Yeah,
no. You know, Azarello, really Darwin Cook.
They had to go big names. For what if
yeah, exactly. They, but it,
they and went it's big. The people I would want on those characters.
Oh yeah,
I mean it's like. Each one of them is like, oh yeah, obviously, you know.
Am I going to play the devil's advocate here?
Sure, sure. I'd love to hear
on the initial thing. Like everything exploded. Like I hated this idea. I really did. Like I love Darwin Cook. I'm a Darwin Cook fan. And I hated this idea because it really did. It's not. It doesn't go with the feel of the book. Like the feel of the book. It's.
I'll give you that.
It's
finite.
Well, yeah, it was finite, but it was also it made a statement for a generation of comics. Like, it made a statement for...
It was a period.
Yeah, as a period. Like, this is what Alan Moore says we shouldn't do. And just bringing in the prequels, that's exactly kind of playing the awkward angle of, yeah, that's pretty much what Alan Moore did not want for this entire thing.
I
mean, but...
I'll give you that. Like, no. It's not a debate because it's so, you know, obvious. Like, on that side of it, conceptually, what... this book was about. The prequels are almost the opposite of that. It's like, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a good, better example of something that...
Like celebration versus a deconstruction.
I
see the, you know, the team,
the artistic merit behind it.
Like, this to me strikes more, you know, as a celebration of comics.
Because it's a prequel. Do you know what I mean? Like, that at least makes it...
Doesn't
so
affect
like,
the core of
yeah.
it.
Yeah.
Exactly. There's a lot...
If it was a sequel, that would be like, ooh, I feel a little dirty.
And you know you're going to be reading that, and it's also it's kind of going to be enhanced
when you, like when you read Crossed.
You know what direction these characters are ultimately going to take.
Yeah,
so seeing like what they do and
it's like seeing episode one.
So do you, yeah. And I think that a lot of people are drawing like those comparisons, and it's on the other side of it, on the devil's advocate side of it, I see that like. Are my experience on watching the core trilogy affected by the new trilogy? I hate to say it, yeah. Should they be? No, they shouldn't be. Those were great movies. I had a lot of fun. They mean a lot to my childhood and the rest of my life. Should the prequels? They shouldn't, but they do. So I kind of see that point of view. On the other hand, these are going to be great stories. So
two questions. Do you think if this is successful, there will be a sequel? Watchmen 2.
No.
Do you think they'll ride the coattails of that?
I don't know what to say no to. It makes money.
And would you read it if it was B-list creators?
No.
I don't think that's the direction that they're going to go with it. Because the only reason I'm reading this is creative teams.
Then you got the Godfather.
I could care less about the content.
Yeah. When I saw it originally, now all I saw was I'm going to sell a boatload of this.
Oh yeah, of course. Right. Like, and from that,
you had dollar signs in your eyes.
Absolutely. When I saw the creative team, the subject, and the creative teams,
like Walking
who's
Dead,
not going to buy these?
Like Walking you know? Dead trades, right? It's like printing 20.
Yeah,
but from a content standpoint, like Brandon Graham brought up a great thing. Brandon Graham from King, who does King City, and also writes Prophet, which is ironic because I'm just going to bring this up. You've got all these creative teams. Why do something like that? Why don't they just do something new?
Well, I pointed that out. There was a thing on the beat today, and I made a point. I said, but somebody said, why doesn't DC give them money to do original things?
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, Darwin Cook did The Spirit, a book he loved.
Yeah.
That sold a solid 6,000 copies.
Yeah.
And right now, Brian Azzarello and Eduardo Risso are doing Spaceman. That sold 13,000 copies. So
but
why not do
that, like,
something that's going to sell 100,000
couldn't do whatever
copies.
They wanted. Those guys say,
oh,
I have an idea for DC. They're going to be like, yeah, whatever.
Absolutely.
Well, doesn't DC give them money? Isn't that called Vertigo?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but they can do whatever they want. They chose, or they saw the money and decided to do this.
And also, second point, Watchmen is actually based on characters that DC owns.
Right.
Bingo.
Which they could probably just do a reboot of, like, they could do all the Charlton characters. They can do exactly what they're doing with the Charlton characters. And, I mean, as much as it is really good for sales and really good for tying it all in, I could see a Blue Beetle book, like... running the same as the Night Owl.
It wouldn't
have as much excitement.
That's fair.
But that's my argument.
But they also
Alan
own
Moore,
Watchmen,
Alan Moore,
so why not
you,
use
like,
that
why
name?
Didn't you? Yeah. Why didn't you create new characters? You created analogs.
Well, the best was the Leah Moore thing.
Oh, it was the best. Yeah, why don't you do new stuff? Da, da, da. And it's like, well, how's the new Sherlock Holmes book going to do? You know, like, why don't you write your own characters?
And sort of along the lines of doing a reboot, too, is they've mentioned that there's, like, this little one-shot issue at the end of all this.
Yeah.
And I haven't really said what that's going to be, and I'm wondering if it's going to tie up, like, and I'm wondering how the stories for these are going to work.
Flashpoint.
Right. Are these stories going to be intertwined? Are they going to reference each other?
We don't know yet. They don't know yet. I mean, not they, the salespeople, the sales guys don't know.
Really? Well, yeah, but I mean, but I even thought about that when I was thinking, well, how are they going to collect this? Because some of the series are only 4 issues, some are 6 issues.
It's going to end 5 minutes before he walks into the comedian's apartment. You know?
I already
said either that or, and then this is my extreme like tinfoil hat conspiracy theory. the very last issue could just launch this as like Earth 3 or something.
Yeah.
Oh, the Watchmen universe.
Get out of my brain.
That would be
new Grant Moore Superman. Did you see that?
Oh, yeah, with Doom for number, is that 8 or 9? I think that's 8.
8.
Action Comics 8 with the Sunshine, the Sunshine Superman that you touched on in Final Crisis. Hmm.
Was that, I feel like, was that in All-Star Superman 2 or no? Was one of the Supermen? No.
It was,
Sorry, we got lost in the multiverse.
Wow.
Okay, let's move on. One other thing that was neat, Arkea, who does Mouse Guard and a bunch of other stuff. Mostly, most of the stuff they do is like in hardcovers. They don't even do trades; they just do hardcovers. Okay. And it was neat. They did this letter saying, "You know, thanks for Comics Pro. We really like this." One of the things they got out of last year's was something I brought up, but it wasn't just me. I'm sure more people said it. Was I said get rid of the dust jackets because they always get torn, and it's very frustrating. And they listened to us, and now everything is
seriously.
Yeah, they got rid of the dust jackets, and then they even said in this letter last year, so many guys said this. We got rid of this, so we do listen to you. And it was like,
did that? I mean, was there any impact on sales? I wonder.
No, but it was more impact for me not having to report damages or have to discount books because it got torn.
That's a huge part of it.
Yeah,
I like Arkea. I really
Arkea is great. It was last year. He said, "What do you think of when you think of Arkea?" And I said, "Quality. Your stuff is all beautiful."
Yeah. Didn't they just do the Jim Henson book?
Yes,
I have that. Yeah. That's gorgeous. Yeah. And then Fraggle Rock. What was the other one I got? Two Soldiers. Was that it?
Cyclops.
I don't know if that was them. I know where two generals.
Two generals.
But
yes,
I don't know. I don't know if that was Arkea.
But it's because it was the same treatment
with the little rubber band thing,
right? And the rounded.
Well, Tale of Sand is big.
Yeah.
Tale of Sand was definitely awesome with Ramon Perez. Amazing.
Yeah. But so it was neat that for them to show, yes, we do listen to you. Because that's not something big. That's not earth changing that we asked for. And
it
they
was
went.
Like $30.
Yeah.
The freaking the Clone Saga.
Yeah.
Ben Reilly trade paperbacks are $35, $39 now, right?
Yeah, but who buys them besides me?
I do.
You do. You too. Thank you.
I have the issues too.
We're getting there.
The week they came out.
We'll get there. I got one more thing anyone want to say about Comics Pro. But and then the neat thing with the bar, just because it's very casual, like the first night I was talking to Keith Davison from Avatar, and just I was talking about C-Day. I'm like, you know, everybody's excited. It's a very casual that you're not getting, if you're at a meeting and he's sitting talking. So it's just very casual, very, very fun talking. I talked to a bunch of guys from Dark Horse. Mike Richardson is a giant. I never felt short before talking to somebody.
I'm going to
Portland short.
This summer, and like that's one of like number one on my list.
Yeah,
is to
nice guy, and he's like, "Yo, call me. Here's my number. You have a question, you have a problem, call me." That's which cool. is just neat. You know, there's a
they do tours of their. Of their operation, which is
probably,
Marvel
yeah.
doesn't do.
No.
DC doesn't do. They're in Portland.
Yeah.
Oregon.
They have the giant concrete, what do you call it? What are we talking about?
Horse?
Yeah, Dark Horse. They have a giant concrete, like life-size statue, which is cool.
Is that why
concrete.
Bendis lives there?
Oh, okay.
Bendis lives there. And like,
everybody lives in Portland.
Well, yeah, exactly. It's because there's a disproportionate amount of concreters there because it's a nice like community that's not so crazy. And, you know, it's super left-wing, which is good. And it's also close enough to L.A. that they can skip over there for all their dealings.
Without being in L.A.
Without being in L.A., exactly. That's why they all live there.
A 2-hour flight, maybe 3 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. Hop on in, make a deal, and, you know, never see that project.
Climate's a little bit better than Seattle.
Yeah. So that was really cool. And then the last thing I want to get to is what Marvel said at this big panel. when we were asking the panel where, what are you doing to help grow print? And get, so that was the panel.
They said, look at that, and then they ran away.
No, so it was kind of funny at one point... I think he had a dollar in his hand for some reason, and Bob Wayne reached around who was between him and gave him $2 and said, "There you go, I just doubled your advertising budget." Which was, they jab constantly. But yeah. One thing was interesting, because through the whole thing, last year Marvel didn't even show up for the roundtable.
Hmm.
This year he was very attentive, what can I do, and I talked to him and stuff. But it was interesting, the only way I can say it is, it was interesting to see Marvel humbled. Because yeah. here, they had always been the top dog. We don't care what you say. We don't sure. care what you want, what you need. And all of a sudden, they're like, what can I do to help you? It was just, it was nice because they've been really arrogant.
Bob Wayne is a funny guy. I was on a panel in 2003. It was all a Bendis board. And I was like, I used to be a hardcore Bendis board guy. And they brought five or six of us up on the panel just to like be up there. Just as sample fans, because we were like, you know, hardcore Bendis fans for Bendis' panel. And he said... This is the one, I don't know if you guys have heard of this before, where he introduced the concept of the Daredevil-Batman crossover and said, why don't we make this, DC? I want to make this. We've talked about it with Brubaker and DC and me for Marvel. This would make a lot of money for retailers, and why isn't this being made? People buy it. Daredevil-Batman. Bendis.
Okay.
Because I've tried it every other way. I'm just going to say it in public forum. How do we do this? Bob Wayne raises his hand. He goes, we can do this. And they go, what? Oh, yeah, all you have to do is just fire Joe Quesada. You fire him, we're right there. Not while he works there. And I'm like, oh. And so he goes, Bob, we're not going to do that. He goes, well, that's all you have to do. Open door. And I was like, oh, man, I was on stage. Like, wow. That's really funny.
Yeah. That is awesome.
But so then, it, you know, every publisher is going, you know, giving their little spiel, here's what we're doing, and it gets to Marvel, and he goes, the summer's event is Avengers versus X-Men. Mm-hmm. The basic idea of it is the Phoenix is coming back to the Earth and is a threat to the Earth. The Phoenix represents death and rebirth.
Really?
And he kind of left it at that.
Rebirth.
So, yes. Later...
We're paying attention to what our competition is doing.
Later on, he said, we pay attention to what has been successful for our competition. So...
Interesting.
Didn't make say anything, but very yeah, coy, make of it what you will.
And that would explain why they would be, you know, come in humble and smiling and, you know, like a cat ate the canary.
Yeah.
New 53.
So we get...
No, new 100.
The new 616.
Yes.
And also Ends of the Earth.
So seven of them are Venom books.
I don't know anything. Just repeating what I heard, but...
So maybe we'll get Ends of the Earth and Ends of Spider-Man Volume 1.
Yes. And then we'll get a whole bunch of number ones coming.
I could talk at length about what it would mean if Marvel rebooted. That would be a thing, but yeah, why? I guess why talk about it now?
Yeah. In time for the Spider-Man movie?
No, it won't be in time for the Spider-Man movie. Right. Okay.
The one-year anniversary of...
Yeah,
that's enough of my travels.
Right on the day.
Talk about that for a long time.
Gee, kids, DC's at number 12. You could start at number 1.
That's a cool insight, though. This is an event in comics that people don't really get to hear a lot about. About this retailer.
Investigate this. I have to look at what I'm getting.
Sure.
Those are just second.
Oh, I know. Second.
So what's next on the old agenda?
Six.
Next, I had Comic Book Men. How many people watched Comic Book Men?
I live tweeted. We were so positive.
Watched the first 15 minutes.
Dang.
I live tweeted every minute.
I watched the whole thing.
I also.
So
my take on that is it's like every other pseudo reality show on History or AMC.
Yeah.
It is an entertainment show, but it's not realistic.
That doesn't do it good.
My big problems with it is it didn't seem to have a focus. It wanted to be Pawn Stars without doing it as well. It wanted to be a podcast.
Chris Hardwick's Nerdist.
But didn't do it very well.
Like his show is very much like that, where it's a...
Okay.
It looks... he does a podcast. I don't know if you guys know this, but this is a podcast.
Oh, yeah. No, I know that.
Yeah, this show is a podcast that we... Right. The Comic Book Man... It's not called that.
Not this show.
No, no, no. I'm sorry, guys. We're in a podcast.
I thought you were being ironic.
I'm being meta.
All right, yeah.
But, no, like, this show is loosely based on a podcast that Walt Flanagan and Brian Johnson and I believe Kevin Smith do. Kevin Smith does, like, 17 podcasts.
Yeah.
And this one is about this, but it's filming a podcast is like, it's not good. It's not good TV.
No. But they didn't even do that well. That was my problem with it. It started off where they were talking about which characters they'd like to have sex with, which is brilliant and cutting edge and not...
Lots of Kevin Smith staple.
Right. Really. And then they showed a picture of each character as they did that, which is great. You know, we'll fill you in. But then later on, when they're talking about the Kirby dots,
which is cool.
Yeah. Never showed you the Kirby.
They didn't show what a Kirby dot was.
That's a good point. That's a good point.
And it's so it was just one of those production things that didn't make sense. My other problem with it was later on during the very, very staged, let's have a sales competition between you guys, including the customer who doesn't work there, but he's in the competition.
Yeah, so who is this guy, Nick? You follow that a lot more than I do.
Yeah, I'm
any of us do.
I'm a Kevin Smith fan. He is a... Kevin Smith essentially has an entourage that Kevin feels that he needs to employ. Jay Muse is the famous one.
Right.
He brings nothing to the table, but he feels like he has to, you know, employ him in all of his movies. He also has hangers-on that are actually have cameos in it. Like, you know, you ever tell him, you know, get him, tell him Steve Dave.
Right.
And, you know, that's
Flanagan.
And then, you know, Walt Flanagan's dog and all those things. Well, that's, who's that? That was... The bearded gentleman was
Steve Dave.
It was the titular Steve Dave, and he is just a friend who from New Jersey who just doesn't have anything better to do and knows Kevin Smith and hangs on and is essentially entourage. Just think of an entourage member.
Yeah.
Flanagan is a
Flanagan actually got an art gig doing
Batman
White and Geyer.
Cacophony, yeah.
He did White and Geyer too.
Okay. Correct. That's
they're both
the
pretty
part.
Much. But
better than I expected.
Better than I expected.
From it being Kevin Smith's friend.
Correct.
So wait, that dude, the
he drew
bearded
that.
Dude.
He's just a friend.
He's a friend. But the guy behind the counter was.
Yeah, but you should talk about having like customers that just kind of hang out all day and
do a podcast.
Talk to your customers and do a podcast. But
no.
Just saying.
my problem with him is they show him trimming his beard in the store and sleeping on a table in the store, and you're just like. My wife saw him as soon as he came on screen. She's like, "He's going to kill the show."
Yeah,
they're playing him up as funny. He's not funny, and he looks like Alan Moore if that's what he's going for.
Which is creepy.
But the Batman thing was funny.
No, that was funny. But hang on. So they're doing the sales contest, and they look at the Ming, the guy who they make racial epithets against the entire show, which that's
the whole show.
Good show.
Yeah.
And they ask him what would he want if he won the thing, and he pointed to the other guy and said, "I want his job." Well, that's great, except they never explained what these guys did.
Right.
They were off-panel until somebody would walk in, and Walt Flanagan would go, "Hey, guys, come up and look at this," and they'd mysteriously come out of the back. What were they doing? Yeah. We don't know.
And the other thing is that store cannot possibly make money.
No.
Oh, it does. It actually makes a ton of money. It's the base of where they sell Kevin Smith merchandise from.
Well, that's all they ever showed.
But like, they ship it from
but
there.
But from comic
that's
standpoint, he's got three...
The comics are like whatever.
He's got three dudes working all
SKU,
the time.
Yeah, USQ.
Yeah.
Well, and that's the thing that I was.
That's one doesn't work. Actually get paid.
I was one. Well, that's the fourth. There was three dudes at work,
yeah,
shirts on, and then there was that other
Mike
Alan Moore wannabe.
And
I was wondering how much they were going to focus on people actually coming in and buying things.
Not one person,
right.
But not even a generic look at this person looking at the rack shot. Did you get in Pawn Stars? They at least show people milling around
the store. Was empty.
They never showed anybody milling.
It was
real bad,
sloppy.
This week is supposed to have more about customer buying. At least that's what I.
Wouldn't you put all your good stuff in the first one?
Yeah.
What do you mean?
I'll tell you what.
Good stuff. Look at the guy with
the handcuffs. If it completely ripped off Pawn Stars, I'd be cool with that.
That's another.
But then
the guy in the hand.
It was a rip off of Pawn Stars and like the old E. Howard Stern show.
Yeah,
it was like the radio.
Yeah.
You know, like
but it was more
like nothing happened.
True Pawn than Pawn Stars.
Yeah.
But,
more like the True TV.
But like the stuff. I mean, I like how the guy brought in the $6 million Man doll and the Spider-Man Mego and something else. And what do they focus on? The $6 million Man doll because. Who has a book written by, you know, who's writing
Kevin
a $6 million man book?
Did you notice all
that's
the
on my list.
And all
oh,
the
yeah.
toys up
yeah.
front
that's
of the camera?
Fine.
Yeah,
I
understand
that. Yeah.
But where's the conversation about, hey, I just watched Walking Dead, which was just on TV right before this,
stuff up there, though,
and why don't you, but why not say, oh, you know, well, here's the book, it's not quite the same, you know, just some sort of conversation.
Right there, too.
And just for the record, I'm never giving you $10 to help you buy something. I was
Well, here's the other thing. So when somebody comes in, even if it's something that I'm really excited about, I don't go, wow, you have this, I've always wanted this, and I'll pay you $200 for this.
I've never missed a Pawn Star episode, and those guys have great poker face.
Yeah.
Yes.
Walt Flanagan, when that $6 million man came in, he was, you know, giddy and jumping.
That's because they're not salespeople. They're entourage people that are given jobs.
Right.
Like
but
they don't really sell comics at that store.
But then the one lady comes in and is like, you want to sell us a Chucky doll? Well, first, I'd say, I don't want a Chucky doll.
That chick,
but that was all so set up.
Absolutely.
It's called Comic Book Man. Why do they spend so much time talking about
how many comic books did you see in that show? I saw two.
Was there two?
There were two. There was the detective.
Which is a cool detective.
But here's the thing. It's a signed Blade. Why don't you show us the signature?
Yeah, they never did.
You know, it's a CGC copy of Detective. Yeah, the guy just happens to walk in with a CGC.
Yeah, that was
Detective.
A 1.5.
And a signed Bob Kane
thing. Yeah, yeah. You got to think about this, right? I mean, how long do you think it takes them to film an episode of Pawn Stars?
Oh, sure,
I
bet you it's absolutely.
That's a professional production. Yeah. What this reeked of to me is Kevin Smith said, "Hey guys, I'm willing to do a television show," and they were like, "Oh, Kevin Smith." Yeah, whatever.
Well, here's the thing.
And then he's like, oh, I don't really put a lot of time into things because I do podcasts.
One other question. They call in the expert for the lobby cards. What store is going to buy lobby cards?
Yeah.
They call in the expert for that, but not call in the expert for the Bob Kane picture.
Yeah. Well, they said they were Bob Kane experts, would be my opinion, right?
They know how much, you know, but they were more interested in what it was written on,
on the back
than the front of it. It was just, I'm watching this just going, you guys are just...
I love how they thought that he was writing notes on the back of it for a brand new character. Yeah. What are the odds of that?
Zero. You don't think the guy ever looked at it before?
Well, here's the other thing about that. I don't remember. I'm trying to remember when this show actually got pitched and was actually a thing. I think it was like maybe 2 years ago Kevin Smith started talking about doing a show in his comic store. It's taken that long.
Is it really? That long?
Yeah, it's been that long.
Well, I mean, how many people bring in a CGC of Detective Comics? I mean, it's going to take a year to film to find that one dude, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
and just a word of warning, if you start pulling stuff off my shelves and smashing it on the floor to be funny, I won't be happy with you.
Of course.
Nobody's going to come to your defense.
You can pay for it.
Yeah. I'm watching that going, that weird. You made 45 books, but you just smashed two $50 plates.
I do like how that old guy came up and started yelling.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And I was like, yeah,
take that. The guy was like, well... I'm ahead because I'm selling all this stuff for like a dollar a piece.
So,
like,
yeah.
What? I feel like you're behind.
I feel like that old man should have his own reality show.
Yeah. But
like,
they're playing up this big...
and yells at people. At
they're playing up this huge mecha. And they show these two tables, you know, and some cars behind it. It was like
other tables.
It was like
occupied.
Okay. Yeah. This,
well, it was. It's supposed to be like a ghetto flea market,
right? But show it.
There
show more.
There
was no context to the show.
They
give you a blur for 10 seconds. That was the most interesting part of the show. With that little background.
The beginning of the show was all right. Like when they were talking about what characters they liked and all that. And I thought it was going to stay on that path. No. It just
made a no purpose.
The story made is on that network.
Here's the only thing. Like the only thing I really cared about in the show was, does this make people at comic stores look like they're creepy people?
Yes.
Yes. Brian Johnson makes.
Brian Johnson was the problem. Huh?
Well,
that was
the
problem.
And the first conversation.
I thought the rest of them were fine.
In the first conversation where it was, who do you want to have sex with?
Character would you want to
have sex with? Batman having sex with Robin.
They also worked in the word kapow right in the opening sequence, which is like number one, you know, thing you don't do is reference that trope.
But they always think you're a creepy comic book guy, right? And the first conversation they have is, who do you want to have sex with?
Yeah.
Well, that was my biggest problem
Kevin
with
Smith,
the show.
There's a stereotype
out there of what comic book
and they just amplified it.
And that is exactly what they showed on that show.
I went to a show with Kevin Smith and the whole cast of Zach and Mary Make a
movie.
You can say it. It's a title.
Adult film. We went to the improv, and all of a sudden they said, hey, guys, we just got a last minute. They're coming in 11 o'clock. It's going to be Kevin Smith. Now, I went there. It was the guy from The Office, Daryl. He was playing
Craig.
It was Seth Rogen. He was singing the whole time. I mean, he did a little bit of stand-up. Jay was there. And then Kevin. Now, Kevin talked for an hour and 45 minutes about... anal tear.
Yeah,
that was his whole stand-up.
Oh, geez, he's been talking about that. Everything you ever see, he talks about.
Here's
that.
Here's the thing: Kevin Smith is not a stand-up comedian.
He thinks he is.
He likes to talk about Kevin Smith.
He just talks. Like,
I mean, he's interesting. I love listening to him. Yeah, but in that
he's put out four DVDs.
The thing is, Kevin Smith has like a following.
And I was one of
those. I've seen him live
four times. People like listening to Kevin Smith talk about Kevin Smith, even if it involves him talking about that.
So
I have his autograph.
What was that jersey? What was the jersey he was wearing?
That was his podcast.
I thought it said like Siri on the front.
Oh no,
advertising for
Siri. No, it's Sir. It's Sir. He for whatever reason, him and Muse use the word Sir so much, like in reference to each other. Like they caught like they're stoners, you know, whatever. So they use the word Sir. No offense. To nobody can see who my head's turning. So, just say it's somebody.
So, why are you popping? So, anyways, they say sir to each other. I'm a Kevin Smith fan, you know, and I somewhat, you know, feel embarrassed by it, but now, especially. But he says, oh, sir, and you, sir. But one of he literally does six podcasts a week, and the reason is that he's got one more movie he's splitting in two parts, and after that he says he's done with movies, he's just going to do podcasts, which...
Big moneymaker.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cool. Well, he's probably made it
so up. Colin, can tell. So, Colin, yeah.
Listen to the
let's
podcast.
Monetize this podcast.
Okay.
Well, if you
brought to you by Tostito.
Tostitos. Yeah. Saved by the bell.
Saved by the bell.
I listen to Hollywood Babylon and Smodcast pretty regularly.
Yeah.
But to your point, I mean, he's come right out and said, I'm not getting rich off this, but it's low impact for me.
Yeah.
And I can make enough to continue to live the way I do and take care of my family.
Which is cool.
And that's all I really ever wanted to do anyways.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes.
Hot guy.
Yeah.
He seems thirsty too.
Way out of relief.
Yeah. The Donkey Show?
No, Dante's Fiance.
Oh, okay.
But to your point, that set, if you will, on the Anal Fisher has been reworked so many times. It was that was just the podcast I listened to today.
So, change of topics. Isn't there supposed to be a competitive show coming out to this, like on a different network? Isn't there supposed to be another retailer show?
No.
No, I seriously thought
that'd be good.
We're being picked up by WQED.
Are we sweet? Yes. I mean, that's something that, like, I would actually watch if it had none of the Kevin Smith stuff on it.
That's true.
Absolutely none of it. Like, if it was actually somebody, it was actually something like something here. Or
but
something
so many
like
great conversations take place just at the counter.
Well,
right.
That's the birth
and
of the dialogues.
But yeah, Kevin Smith has to get a Kevin Smith.
The red chair.
Leave it alone.
I mean, like, it sounds, I'll admit not having watched it, but I've watched enough Kevin Smith movies to know that, like.
You know where it's going.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah. But yeah, like you mentioned the one dude like sleeping on the counter and all that. He's trying to he's obviously like bringing in clerks. He's bringing in all this stuff.
Yeah,
like
it's a good point.
Yeah, like why
he's
would
cultivating
that
audience again of the slacker generation? Which
but is there enough people to give him ratings to keep this thing going?
Following.
I bet you just following.
It's six episodes. Yeah, I don't know if you know
that. Yeah.
Oh, it is.
Yeah, and on Twitter, Kevin Smith said he has no information whatsoever if they're going to pick it up for more.
Well, right. I can't imagine. So, I mean, it would have to take him 3 years to film like six episodes.
Once
but
they got a formula,
you stage it. You say, hey, do you want to sell something to Kevin Smith? Come here. They pick the best one.
The people that came into the store had to be staged.
You got a point.
Look at the time slot they have it in. What's it following?
Yeah.
Well, who's the majority of the people watching it?
And it's right before Talking Dead, so people are going to say,
you have your stock.
Did you guys watch Talking Dead?
Trick it.
Not yet.
It's a trap.
Not yet. I couldn't do two and a half hours that
like
night.
It.
Two
do you know what? Do you know what a lot of people don't actually bring up ever is that the Talking Dead is a completely new precedent in television. Unless I'm wrong, has there ever been a television show? Yeah, about television show talking about a television show you just watched?
Oh
the Real Housewives reunion.
They do that.
Well, just at the end of the season.
But you know what they do?
But I think they'll film those ahead.
The Jersey Shore.
Do they do that? Is there a show?
So you watch
who watches that?
Chad, I'm sad to know that you watch that show.
I don't care about that. All I care about is like, is this a television first?
No, they do.
Because that seems so fanboy to say like, we just watched a show, let's talk about it. You know, like
The Bachelor, After the Rose.
Oh. Really?
Well,
I don't watch
finale, though.
Big Brother.
You don't watch The Bachelor
right after the fact. You know what I mean? Like,
my reality shows are Pawn Stars and Storage Wars.
Yeah, I think it's a cool
lineup.
Those are my shows.
Yeah,
and Tosh.0.
Well, I'll shush one.
And with our little save by the
Okay,
back.
So.
That's not reality.
Walking Dead. Let's keep moving.
Good.
Okay. All right. I just read issues 69 through 76.
Wow. Okay, well, we'll talk about a TV show.
Wait, what podcast is this?
Well, no, it's comic related.
No.
Because I'm caught, you want to know what happens in 92?
I do.
Wow. I was surprised by the
past number
like
six.
Six so issues and six issues.
Yeah. But what did everybody think about the show?
Ugh.
I thought that was a really great
so emotional.
Episode to come back on,
My only question about it is, why did Lori leave?
Because she sucks. I'm so mad at Lori this season.
Here's the thing.
I'm out.
Oh, you're leaving?
I got
out.
You're
good?
Okay. Baby calls.
Congrats.
Okay. Congratulations.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's going to be a father.
Less frequently than...
Yeah. That's part of the gig.
Well, I'll still be here.
Yep.
It's all uphill from here.
See you guys. No, it's not uphill. knowing what happens in the book, it's like make it happen sooner.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'll give you that. Like, we're so far ahead in the comic that it's like, I'm sure there's a lot of that feeling. But I'm excited that the fact that all the deviations.
Yes.
Like, if this were following the comic exactly, I would be really, really
absolutely.
Shane
absolutely.
Is actually something that I enjoy. Yeah.
But it's
I love more Shane.
I think everybody hates Lori, so the fact that, you know, she's shown upside down in the car in a walker coming, trying to get her, I'm kind of sitting there going, spoiler. You deserve it, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, who likes you?
The best line of that show is olive oil.
Yeah, that was great.
That was cool.
Like the dude from Blue Knight.
That was the best.
Well, the fact, I mean, I guess we're talking about the show, but what happens, let's go into it. Who's the guy from True Blood?
Terriers, I guess.
Terriers.
Like,
really cool show.
Yeah, really good show.
But yeah, I saw him and I'm like, okay, well. Rene, totally. I'm like, this is a guy that's a really good actor. He's a legitimate actor. He's a big actor. And in TV, that usually means he's going to be around for a while. So I'm like, this is the guy that I'm excited to see in a couple episodes. I actually tweeted because I was live tweeting. And I'm like, oh, cool. We saw him as a vampire. Now we're going to see him as a zombie. And then he just died.
Maybe.
I'm like, what?
Well, no. He can't be a zombie.
You're talking about the two guys.
Well,
yeah. Okay, yeah. No,
that was awesome.
I love tense.
That was a defining moment for
Rick. You know the shootout is coming.
Yeah.
But and that one was just
the tension was just raising. It's like, hey, how you doing? And all of a sudden you see Rick that just changed.
If you
was
read
just
the
like,
comics,
this
like,
isn't
that's
right.
the Rick
Something's
of the
wrong.
Comics. Yeah. Rick makes moves that are so like and again, we use our morality, which is set in a society where there's rules and there's police and there's organization and whatever. And this is, and you read it and you're like, oh, Rick's kind of not a good guy. But no, it's a different set of morality. And this is all of a sudden seeing that Rick where he's adapting to the, you know, the new reality. And in fact, you saw the first time you ever see like that Rick from the comics. And you also got to see a little picture of Carl from the comics too.
Yeah.
Crazy Carl.
I'm really hoping, like, I don't know, like with the appearance of like sort of the comic Rick, how long does Shane really have? Because that's basically who Shane
but
was.
He's in a
That's a good point.
Yeah. That's who Shane was.
What is the point of Shane then?
Yeah. He's already in a new show.
Oh.
He went with the guy who got fired.
The director.
Yeah.
The rumor was that someone from the cast said, like, broke their contract when Darabont left.
Yeah.
And they didn't renew the contract. And the rumor is that it's Shane because he signed on for Darabont's new show.
And I saw a preview for him.
But he probably, I mean, he probably did that because he's like, he knows he's Shane.
Yeah.
You know, he's like,
how long am I going to
He's like looking at the clock down, like, there's a precedent for me dying. You know? So, but yeah, I was so excited for that episode because I was like, all right, I get to see the comic book Rick and the comic book Carl. The comic book Carl is the ultimate adapter. And the reason is because when you're a kid, everything you learn is flexible. You know, you can learn faster. You can adapt quicker. Mm-hmm. And if you're in a situation that's totally foreign and totally crazy, you're going to adapt to it quicker than everybody. And everybody else is stuck in their old morals, not Carl. Yes. Carl's in the new morals where things are, if he's a problem, just kill him.
Mm-hmm.
He's seen that happen. That's a precedent.
I just thought the scene where Rick is grabbing the...
pulling on his
when he's just tapping
revolver,
on the revolver, that was just awesome.
Rarely has there been an adaption of a comic book that has, you know, been so amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That rivals the source material.
I feel for my man Daryl, though. I think by the end of the season, he's going to be certifiable. Even he's going to go off the deep edge more than Shane.
I agree. He's the quiet crazy right now. Yeah. Like, he's the one that you're like...
And
what is he gripping onto now?
And it's you know, kind of sad because that's how they present him at first, you know, dumb redneck who's going to do something stupid.
Yeah.
But then it was like he had his little moment of nobility and...
Yeah, his character
away from
now
him.
You, crazy. And now you've taken it away from him.
Yeah. See, what has he got to hold on to?
I've seen him a lot to turn into... Yeah. I've seen him a lot as, like, a character like Sawyer off of Lost.
Yeah, I agree. Or
I
like
feel
like
he's going
like
to be...
Jane
like
Cobb.
He's going to totally do, like, a 360 on you. That he's not going to be
he's
that
the rogue
same type.
Of the group.
Yeah.
Well, we've sort of... When we had the episode in the previous half of the season where he was hallucinating, he saw Merle. I think that set the precedent for he's walking the edge. He can go either way right now.
Yeah.
And
now it's like
the preview for next week showed somebody messing like with his ears or something, and he like freaked out.
It was the little girl's mom.
And I think that's going to be the issue in this half of the season is how they treat him is going to determine whether he leaves or kills them or just stays with them and is very quiet. Because you know, his hallucination of Merle had said they just see you as a dog. They send you to do jobs, and that's what he got at in this episode when he freaked out at Lori. He was like, I'm not an errand boy. You can't just send me to do things. And to which I was almost thinking, he's not Glenn. No. Glenn will go do it if you ask him really nicely, and Daryl will not.
Especially if you have sex with him.
Well, yeah. Well, it,
not you.
No.
You.
Was, whoa. But next I think season. Daryl realizes, Daryl realizes he's not a tool. Man.
Right.
And he doesn't want to be a tool, so he's not going to be used to that.
Comic-Con last year, they had the big setup with Merle on the roof. I thought it was like...
I think, yeah, I remember seeing something like that,
That he was, like, alive?
Yeah.
Well, the running rumor is that he's going to be the TV
governor?
That would be so cool. Yeah.
That's almost what it seems might be happening, like, in the preview for the next one has people outside the bar.
Yeah.
And it's...
More
It's, what's his name, Rourke? The actor's name?
Mickey Rourke?
No. I just know him from Mallrats.
Yeah, it's
That's all.
Kevin Smith coming back.
You're talking Merle.
Yeah. He was the producer. Yeah.
Yes.
But yeah, I mean that guy as the governor would work because he's scary.
Yep.
Like he instantly is scary.
And that's like, and he's played that role before.
Yeah.
Like he's done that before.
And from a TV point of view, it would give the character of the governor a lot more weight to have more of a vendetta.
Agreed. More than a random character. You know, there's something to a random character.
For what he does to the group.
Yeah. Like, I would buy him being able to be angry enough to organize people to do things.
And then, you know, we're sitting here talking about, you know, Daryl, like, can you just imagine him being caught in the middle of that nightmare?
Oh, like that would be that's drama. Yeah. Which side do I go on? This guy who's obviously crazy, but he's my brother.
That's good TV.
Yeah. There's so much fertile ground in this show, and just like the comic, which is great about the show, they got it right. It's not about the zombies. The zombies are their backdrop.
Yeah.
You know, they're where they live. They're not the threat. The threat are people.
Yeah. And it's kind of the relationship between the people and them surviving. And
I'm still waiting for the Christmas issue with the people at the beginning of the first season.
Oh yeah.
Just waiting for them to be in the
next
house.
Christmas.
Yeah. Right.
It'll be a Christmas special.
Do you know
Doctor Who has a Christmas special? Yeah, I know.
I'm waiting for Doctor Who to cross over.
Well, he's crossing
he's not crossing over.
I think it's going to be a crossover with Justified and Raylan Givens.
Oh, yeah.
Raylan Givens would be the king of that world.
No, Boyd Crowder would be the king.
So, what else we got?
Okay, Doomsday Preppers? Have you seen that since this is our TV segment? It fits in with the zombie.
I haven't seen it, no.
Oh, really? I've heard about it. Yeah.
Oh my God, I've seen like three of the episodes.
It's ridiculously insane.
It is. So it's people getting ready for the zombie. And
yeah, the preview's hilarious. This lady is like, the first thing we do if the apocalypse happens, we're going to shoot our cat. Like she has that as her That was number one. Yeah,
Fluffy.
That was number one.
I feel like she just doesn't like a cat. Just an excuse.
No. Here's the thing with it. It's basically like going around to different places and different strongholds, as it were. And, like, people rate this.
Yeah. They tell their story, and then a panel of experts rates them on how effective they are.
Are you serious?
Absolutely.
Who are the experts?
So, hey, you know, you're really good on the food supply, but you might want to think about the water supply.
Yeah, some guy was, like, really high on survival, but, like,
no weapons.
Yeah, no weapons at all.
Like, well, you might want to rethink that strategy. Yeah. And then get rated.
Preppers.
And then, Doomsday Preppers.
What?
It's on National Geographic.
National Geographic.
Why would they give credence to these crazy people? They're like just validifying everything.
Amazing.
There's a family that's like, we made our house out of shipping crates. Like a big metal shipping crate.
It's a fort.
It's amazing. Oil rigs and stuff.
Oh, that sounds.
All right.
Okay.
I hope Mark Brooks gets on that.
Yeah. Now. Another thing. Enough TV.
Take a left turn back onto the topic.
I know Matt wanted to talk about this last week, so we'll jump into this.
So we'll ignore it again this week.
No!
There's
but
a precedent.
There's been a lot of arguing lately amongst creators.
Yes, there
We got the Gary Friedrich versus Marvel. We got...
I'm trying to keep track of all them. What's the title card?
There was the Rick Remender versus everybody.
Robert Kirkman.
There was Kirkman versus Tony Moore.
Well, that's what Rick Remender was part of.
So Rick Remender was just commenting on it, and that's what I saw on Twitter.
The
Remender thing on Twitter is what made me bring this topic up for discussion, was that he was saying, you know, are artists truly creators versus writers? And I guess, you know, in his opinion, they are, at least from what I
intrinsically
read.
No matter what.
Yeah.
I don't know if he said that, but I thought he did. You know, and it was interesting to read what some of the people said. Like Ed Brubaker came out and flat out said, you know, Sean Phillips gets half of everything. we do for...
Was that anecdotal, criminal, though?
Incognito and stuff like that.
I mean, that was his Twitter comment.
Yeah. Right, right, right.
So whether that's what's in the contract or not...
Yeah, yeah.
I think, you know, a lot of it has to be what's in the contract.
Right, I'm just saying what comments on Twitter. I certainly didn't go look up contracts and read them.
What?
That's Colin's loss. That's
no.
Colin's.
Basically, yes. Like, coming at this from an angle of people... I've been on both sides of the thing. I've had to have this conversation on both sides. Usually it's the artist that gets 60% because basically you're writing words. I mean, no matter how good those words are, and this is going to sound really insulting, and I apologize. No matter how good those words are, you're selling in a visual interest. You're selling in a visual industry. If those visuals don't hook up, that book is not going to work out. Like, it doesn't matter. And I hate to say that, but like...
Yeah, I mean, the artist provides, yeah. The actors, they provide, they're the director in some instances, sometimes not. But to me, it seems, I would say it's case by case.
Well, it also depends,
well, it's
too,
contract,
like,
by contract.
Yeah, right. And you obviously, you know, Colin practiced law, not necessarily...
practiced not well, I never got very good
but
at
not
it.
Comic book law, necessarily, but... which is a...
Hey now,
which is
wait a minute.
Yeah, I know, it seems like there's an opening for that. But, yeah, to me, it seems case by case because it's 2012. Now, in 1938, two 19-year-old kids selling something for $130, fair enough. Open that up. But in the 2000s, even in the 70s?
Yeah, but even in 38.
Lawyer up, figure it out.
Just going back to that, just they got paid for it. They didn't know it was going to be big. They didn't, you know, it could have also crashed and burned. They got their $100. The company lost money. That's
right. But why was it big? Was it because of those people or was it because of the mechanisms put in place by the parent company? And that's where I fall.
Well, so here's the interesting thing is when Diodato was here, we talked about different people he's drawn for. And he said certain writers will give him panel-by-panel breakdowns of what they want to see.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And in my opinion, if you're drawing that, you're not as much of a creator.
You're work for hire.
Whereas he said somebody like Bendis will just say, here's the script, I kind of want to see this.
Yeah.
Do
you like know, Smile and Stand did.
Right, like throw your stuff in there. But the other side is you said it's really art. I know at least one person here that doesn't really care about art at all.
That's fair. I mean, it's...
I don't know if it's about the success. See, there's one thing. There's the success of the book and why you read the book. That's one thing. But we're not even talking about the success of the book. We're talking about proprietary concepts.
Yeah.
You know, and if we talk about The Walking Dead, this is a zombie book, okay? There's nothing that the artist, in my opinion, is going to add to this book that's going to make it proprietarily unique. He's going to draw jeans and a t-shirt on people. He's going to draw zombies. As far as creator, now as far as the success of the book, absolutely. He's 50-50, the success of the book. But the success of the property, I would say it's way more tilted towards...
Well, in that case, I agree with you, but in other cases...
It's not Silver Surfer, it's not Kirkman, you know.
But like, in, let's say, Pigs, which is one I talked about earlier, the whole story behind that is the three of them were in a bar talking, and they all came up with the idea together. In my opinion, everybody's a creator at that point.
Correct.
Now, I don't know what's in the contract, right? But at
which
that point,
supersedes everything.
At that point, it should be just split in thirds, if you ask me, right? Because you all came up with the idea.
It's really a question of like who came up with what. Like, I'm not gonna go forward or against for anybody, but like, if Tony Moore came up with a character design and he came up with that, that's obviously what they use for the show.
There's
he
something
should
to
get
that.
He should get some of that money, but like not a
the
ton
success of
it.
The success of the property isn't launched, in my opinion.
Yeah, it's not.
Is not about this property. And if we're talking about case by case, the success of this property is not based on the look of Rick, the look of the zombies, the look of any of that stuff. Like that's all that those things that exist a million times over. The success of this property is completely from the angle in which this story was told. And in fact, to me, and again, all that matters is what they signed, but this is all just talking. But if you look at The Walking Dead number one, it is clearly stated, and rarely stated this way, it says Robert Kirkman, creator, writer, and it says Tony Moore, artist, inker, grayscales. Done deal. Creator.
Yeah.
You don't usually see that.
So to put a more positive spin on this, and the topic I really want to talk about is...
Try it.
Well, anyway, I'm trying to be positive, right?
It's, I mean, like that.
Unique. Yeah. Unusual for me, right?
Give it a shot. See how it fits.
I guess the question this really brought out in my mind was, what draws you to a book? I'll read a book because of an artist. I could care less about the property. I care less about the writer. Huh. I will read it for an artist. I will read for a writer. I think I'm fairly unique in that situation.
No,
not really. Chris, there's Chris, a lot of words. It hurt my eyes.
You're not that special.
Chris will buy a book for the artist every time, right?
Dude, I'll do anything. Even
well,
if
he's
the look
a pro,
does,
so, right?
I'm not I'm a semi-pro. But like, one of the first books I bought on this, I'm pointing to my Kindle.
Woohoo!
But one of the first books I bought was Cry Yourself to Sleep because Jeremy Tinder. I love that dude's work. I've met the man in person. He's amazing. But like, I'll follow a creator to the ground. Like, I'll follow Rick Remender because Rick Remender did amazing things with
Fear Agent.
Fear Agent.
Playmore.
Blackjack Bill. Was it Black?
Days, Strange Girls.
Strange Girls. Blackheart Billy.
Straight.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Whereas like, and it's one of those things where like I don't know. Again, we might be the only two at the table, but I don't really follow characters anymore. I follow like maybe one or two characters, and that's about it.
I'm terrible.
That's,
I'm not going to comment.
Pretty much all I am.
I'm character writer artist.
And you know, I feel a little guilt for that because I've followed the same characters since I was like, you know, in grade school.
But the thing about the character is that it's almost an art thing.
Yeah.
But it's an art thing in the creator kind of sense, you know.
Yeah.
I follow Captain America, you know. What draws you in is the aesthetic of him, the way he was designed.
I'll give you that. That's an art thing.
But what makes me kind of continue to follow Captain America is kind of what writers have done with him to develop his character. Like, what draws me in initially is the art. But then after, you know, decades of reading comics, now it's, you know, it's those characters and it's their visual, like...
But you also read Hawkman, so you can't... I follow characters in the crappy books.
Well, no, that's what I'm saying. Like, I follow the character.
Yeah,
and
right.
like with
all,
I agree with you, Jeremy. Back when I was younger...
Table dances now.
I followed the characters, and I got into them based on their look. Mm. But as I got older, and I've been around comics longer, I'm more about the story than the art. As long as it's a good story, the art I can deal with.
I'm looking at my pile right here, and I'm on the New 52. I'm intrigued by all the stories. I get a ton of Marvel, but I can honestly say half of them I don't read. It's just kind of like I'm hanging on, hoping something happens.
You suffer through the bad years, you know, because there's good years. And
then
a lot of times, you know, if you drop a book, the fear is...
Something you're going
to
miss.
In between, you'll drop the bad stuff, and then you'll get to the good stuff, and then you're like, oh, well, this is referencing things I didn't read.
So you just teach yourself to stick to everything. If I pick up something new off the rack, it's more likely to be that it's an art writer I know than it is where, hey, that art looks really cool. I will say a recent exception... is Matt showed me Blue Estate.
Yeah.
And I saw those Blue Estate covers, knew nothing about... I didn't care what that book was about. I saw those covers, I had to have that series.
And here's a flip side to that entire argument that I just made, and that you're kind of making. Mike Costa. Mike Costa did one of my favorite runs of any book ever, and that's G.I. Joe Cobra.
Where's Joe Fella?
You have a guy that I think feels what you're about to say.
And here's the thing. I read Blackhawks, and that book, I love it to death because it's Mike Costa and it's Graham Nolan, but that book could not get any more ridiculous month by month by month. And it's like, it's exactly the G.I. Joe that I didn't want to have.
See, I thought the art in that book was terrible.
Yeah. We have...
No, go.
I'm good.
What I wanted to say was about Walking Dead, but if it wasn't Tony Moore art, let's say it was a lesser artist, would the book have taken off? And if it didn't take off...
Was he that big when Walking Dead?
He wasn't that big, but he definitely gave the book a look.
But today, whenever I knew that this was, you know, what the podcast subject was going to be, I went out and read a lot of articles about the whole Kirkman, Tony Moore thing. And from what I read, Tony Moore's not sitting there saying that he wants money.
Yeah.
What he's saying is that he's getting his royalties from the show, from the comic, from this and that. What he wants is he wants to know that he's getting what he's actually worth.
Yeah.
He's asking Kirkman for basically like a statement saying, this is how much the show's making, this is how much of it you're getting.
Yeah.
And Kirkman won't give it to him.
But to be honest, he doesn't deserve that because he signed a contract based on the revenue of the property.
That's what
the
issue is.
Yeah, but that's what he said. He doesn't think he's getting the revenue. I see what you're
saying. He's saying the revenue is higher.
He just wants to see the papers.
Yeah. But isn't AMC a publicly traded company? Shouldn't that all
be? But he's not talking about just the show. He's talking about the comics, everything.
More importantly, the trades.
Yeah. It's, and I think that's the misunderstanding with a lot of these legal battles that are coming out right now. I think a lot of people, especially when the stories first broke, that's what I thought the story was when it first broke. I thought he was claiming that he didn't have
any
right. Yeah.
Right.
But then, you know, the more I get into it, and I wish I could find that article that you're talking about, Sean, because I did read that. And it's not that he's saying he hasn't gotten any money ever. It's that he's getting...
He wants an accounting.
He was due accounting.
He doesn't trust him.
Yeah, by the contract, he's supposed to be able to get profit statements and financial documents saying that this is exactly what he's owed. And
but that's not Kirkman's responsibility, right? That's Image, that's
personally,
AMC.
It's not his responsibility, correct.
But is him being the face of Image, him being the face of creator rights, is just kind of...
I think it's also that they signed the contract together. It's like, you know, he was due these things... So, you know, maybe he went to the financial people, they said no, so then he went to Kirkman, and Kirkman also said, I can't help you, so he's just going
to try. You have to be sued. You have to sue the person that's legally able to give you what you want. Kirkman
but maybe it is Kirkman.
I think
because
he can.
Kirkman, the creator,
I think
is the owner of the property.
I don't think he's doing the day to day on these numbers, but I think he can make it happen.
You think he's entitled to Image's financial statements?
It's not Image. It's Walking Dead sales
numbers. Image doesn't have. Yeah, Image doesn't have.
They won't give
they're separate numbers because Image just takes a percentage.
And he's a whatever with like a
no, I can't
sales from whatever with
no.
Yeah, and plus the imprint of itself, Skybound has its own like things too.
And it's the thing like. They've known each other for so long.
Yeah.
I think they were childhood friends.
That's what's terrible. Unlike the other story, which I don't know if we have time to talk about, but
Gary Friedrich.
Yeah.
So what was that?
There was a really good
I know.
Thing.
I've been reading a lot about
Ty Templeton had a neat thing on the beat today. I really liked that.
What's the gist?
What's the character in question? Book in question?
It's Ghost Rider.
First appearance.
But the Ty Templeton thing was very interesting. They're like, oh, how dare you sue? And have him, and he goes and it's little Forbush man.
Chad's leaving.
And he's saying, but Marvel sued us first. You know, Marvel sued him first. You know, it's the fan yelling at Marvel and Marvel going, but he just sued us first. Well, you're trying to get 17,000. And Marvel going, yes, because we spent hundreds of thousands of dollars defending ourselves.
Litigation.
He's saying, but he owns this character, and it's saying, well, the editor and the artist. Say he don't. He doesn't. He didn't create it.
I mean, I've been reading a lot about this in the last week, and here's the gist of it. Gary is, I don't know if you guys go to a lot of cons, but he's a perennial con goer.
Yeah.
He hasn't produced a lot of material, and the reason he hasn't produced a lot of material, allegedly, although multiple confirmed, is that he has a problem with alcoholism and health issues or what have you. So because of that, he has not worked in the comic field as such, but he does go to cons. And he goes to cons, and what he does, and I've seen him dozens of times, is he lays out about a dozen or more Ghost Rider images that he signs or sketches, etc., which is fine. That's what people do at cons. That's not odd or weird or anything. The only thing he's ever done in his career for the last 20 years is just that. So he's at the end of his rope. He doesn't have much money. So what he does is a Hail Mary pass, looking at everybody else, getting their money for their projects. He sees Ghost Rider film coming up, and he says, you know what? Marvel does not want this bad press right now. They, and I say Marvel, really what I mean is Disney, doesn't want this bad press right now. They don't want the creator coming at their book. So here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to ask him for X amount of money, and I'm going to make a stink about it. And you know, their assistant DP on the movie probably is getting paid more than I want. So this should be a slam dunk, no problem. I'm just going to make it happen. And, you know, if it doesn't work, guess what? Whatever. No big deal. I'm calling the lawsuit. So Marvel goes through it, and they win fairly quickly from what I've heard. And they say to themselves, so what's the precedent we set here? Do we set the precedent that anytime anybody wants some money, they can come after us when they need some money, and we have to incur the cost of legal? And this is Disney, who bought a product called Marvel, who has a product like this. Mm-hmm. So they're three times removed. Do we just let that go, or do we set a precedent? And I think what they decided to do is set a precedent that may come off mean to some people, but they have to recoup losses. And they do that by doing this, not so much because they need the $17,000. They don't. They're doing this to set a message to people saying, look, if you come after us with nothing,
and just because it doesn't cost you anything, we want there to be some kind of fear behind that. And this is going to be the fear from now on.
Well,
it's tragic. Mm-hmm. It's not a story that makes you feel good. But it's business.
Precedent, right?
In my opinion, this is all about precedent setting.
Because if it's 17,000, the next guy wants 25, and then that's 50.
Well, no, but he probably sued for.
He probably sued for way more.
2 million. They're right. Just coming back to him.
The court's just a.
All they could get out of him was 17. Yeah. But with 17 to him is probably 4 or 5 million to Marvel. But the thing that's crazy about this, the other precedent from that. I mean, from that point, I totally get it. What would scare me though, is I was an artist in Artist Alley, and I had, let's say, a Wolverine drawing that I was commissioned. I would think to myself, well, geez, at any point, Marvel set the precedent for, coming at me for having this sketch of Wolverine, fighting Hellboy or whatever it is. So do I not do that? And the other thing is, what about these sketch covers, these blank variants they put out?
Yeah.
Like Scotty Young mentioned that today on Twitter.
Here's the thing.
Is that entrapment?
do you want to go first? Because I've got a huge thing.
Well, okay. There's one thing I saw. One of the things this Ty Templeton article said was... that Mike Ploog didn't even authorize him to reproduce those images. Yeah. And that was another problem. He was selling...
Like, some of them are like Danny Ketch.
They are Danny Ketch.
Like Danny Ketch covers that he has nothing to do
with. He didn't even create that character.
Just real quick. On Comic Book Resources, they actually talked to Joe Quesada and Dan Buckley today. And it's a really long interview, but
it's
kind of interesting. I've been skimming through it. But basically, Quesada's take is that, and this is just, I'll give you a condensed version. He says that Gary sued them in 07, claiming that as the writer, he was the creator of Ghost Rider. The federal judge disagreed, and Gary's lawyer said that they were going to appeal, but they're still waiting on that to happen. But basically, he says that through that legal battle, whatever happened there, there was a legal document that said that Friedrich's case was dismissed, but that Marvel could still get the money back from the unlicensed merchandise that he sold, which would be those Danny Ketch covers and things like that.
And that's where I'm coming from. Like, I hate to say this, but I could care two shakes of a rat's tail about Gary Friedrich. I'm not gonna come down on either side of that. But Sean Murphy brought up a good point. He actually made the statement that he's not going to sell anything in anything Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Like if anybody comes up to him at a con,
it's a weird precedent.
He's not going to sell anything. Well, he's DC exclusive, but here's the thing. But like, if you ever do Artist Alley at a bigger con, like
I've done
MegaCon, I've done SuperCon, I've done
a bunch.
Pretty much, yeah. But like, there is actual legal paperwork saying that you're not supposed to use copyright images.
Mm.
Nick and I both know a guy that's had cease and desist orders from Etsy because he was selling Marvel licensed images, and that's a hell of a precedent for anybody like doing sketches or wanting to start out, because at any time, like you just said, at any time they can shut you down.
So you're saying that artists on Artist Alley have been living under this regime for so long that it's not, this isn't a precedent. This is something they always play the game.
Yeah. It is, but what is it? Is there a difference between actually sitting down and doing a sketch or having a pre-made thing that you've mass-produced and then selling that way? I think there might be a difference.
What if you didn't draw it? Now, is that a different line too? Like, let's
that
say
could be too.
If you were if you were to have a print of Wolverine at your table that you drew, is that something that you think they would come after you for, as opposed to like somebody else drew?
It's
right.
Yeah,
so that's what he did. He's a writer.
I mean, they came after Mike Ploog, but the fear is that they will come after you because of that. Like,
and I understand your fear, like what you're saying. My only curiosity about that, and don't get me wrong, I can see Disney being very vindictive and doing something like this, but I wonder, would it be worth the actual costs of, paying somebody to go to a con, walk around to shut somebody down,
but
the legal costs of shutting you down.
They are, but like,
I mean, I could see them doing it.
He's
a
writer that printed out some Dave Dorman paintings and then signed
Mike, them. And Mike Ploog stuff. But
how are they gonna censor like sketches versus prints?
Yeah.
It's a thing with the inherent thing is that it might include prints, it might include sketchbooks. They could actually, like Marvel, Disney, they're terrifying about that stuff.
But you're now, saying that like, you have to sign stuff when you do this.
Now, do you
do it? That says he won't
do it. Do you
that.
Think...
Yeah.
And everybody does.
What do you think, though...
I didn't know that.
What do you think about this easy fix for Artist Alley? That you are... You sell something stupid, like a little index card kind of thing, postcard, whatever.
That Rob Granito drew.
Right. That has nothing to do with anybody's comics.
Yeah.
And then you say, if you buy my card... I'll draw a free sketch. Oh, they can't control that.
Yeah, that's a back line on that.
I mean, that's all.
Free
that's
beer.
You have
to pay for the cup.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's all you have to really do.
That's a back line on that. But like, so many people go to cons, and that's all they sell are prints.
Yeah,
like the guy that usually posts up next to me, and well, our common friend Steve, that's all he sells. He sells animation cells. Of like
of
other people's property.
Yeah.
But he drew them.
Yeah.
That's a big line of distinction in my opinion. Like this is a writer that took literally like Mike Poog or I've seen him sell like Mark Dave Teixeira. Dorman or Mark Teixeira prints and he just puts his name on
it.
That's not why they're buying it.
I don't think Marvel wants to shut down Artist Alley. I think this is limited they're doing this to him, not in retaliation.
I don't think they're
going
to do this to anybody else. No. But I think it's still weird for writer or artists. Yeah, these are still scared.
It's a fear. It's a fear. It's a precedent that they've set. Like,
and the fear will probably do more than them actually doing anything. You know, like by the summer con season thing.
They'll forget about anything.
No, yeah. I don't think they'll forget about it.
They won't enforce.
Artists will be operating probably much more diligently.
This was again. If somebody is not suing Marvel. And it's not a writer
not
printing out somebody
radar.
Else. Yeah, they're on the radar. I think now if that were to happen and they were to be litigious against them, then I think that would be a game changer. But I don't know.
I think it's like I said. I think it's just too many resources
to go
point, after Argus.
I mean, it's going to cost them at least what? Let's just ballpark $5,000 to shut down any artist. Because any lawyer they have on retainer, whatever, send a cease and desist letter, blah, 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 right?
Yeah.
Let's say $1,000, $5,000.
They would just do one. They wouldn't do everybody.
Is that really worth shutting down somebody in Artist Alley that's selling sketches for $50 a pop?
That's fair. But
right.
No. They deal in a world of precedence, though. I don't think so. I don't think so.
I'm sorry.
And again, I don't think it's sketches. I think it's more the prints.
And those artists should be upset almost.
Don't the sketches and that kind of stuff promote Marvel's character?
That's the thing.
I mean, where do you end there then? Like, I could write a Wolverine comic and sell it and say that it promotes Wolverine, right?
So what are they going to do? Like, sue you over fanfic?
Well, that's the thing. They never Marvel
so
never
you monetize
had,
fanfic.
Marvel
yes.
never had an issue with this until he sued them.
Exactly.
Yeah, I think
they didn't care. They wiped their hands up and said, do what you want.
This is retaliatory.
Up until that.
Yeah,
they gave him a fish wrapped in a piece of paper.
Right, it was kind of a pat him on his head, send him on his way if he wants to go to cons. And
yeah,
this.
And he had
and
a bad before.
No harm done.
Another
what do you think, Sean? No?
Another interesting...
No opinion?
Huh? Nothing?
This is pretty much... It is pretty obvious.
Yeah.
another thing I think is interesting from that CBR interview, Buckley says that... he wants to clarify that Marvel is not preventing Gary from promoting his creative association with Ghost Rider. I'm quoting.
Creative association.
It says so this rare. Is. Yeah, it says this is simply not true. The court document Joe mentioned specifically gives Gary the right to sign authorized Ghost Rider books and merchandise and sell his autograph. So what to them means authorized
mean?
Merchandise?
Yeah, what does that mean?
That means he has to get his prints through them.
I guess I would assume.
You think he's just printing them out? Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's... Oh wow! I didn't even know that. So he's
that
just got a print. He's going to FedEx, and he said, "Here's a scan, and print out 30 of these." I'm gonna. Wow,
or you could buy a $1,000 printer to print on cardstock, and
you know what? I almost can buy it if you're like you had one breakout book, right? And this is your kind of like way to like break into the industry. This guy has done nothing but this for 20 years.
That's
like
right.
Marvel's like turned a blind eye for 20 years and like, you know what, you do this, and ugh, we don't like it, but do it.
And
then he's like, I'm going to see you on top of that. Like,
you know the
ugh.
Really sad thing is when you put it all in the context, this is what he does for a living, he's done it for 17 years, and yet Marvel seems to think that the only monetary value in that last 20 is $17,000.
Oh yeah, think about that, that's a good point. His life's not that great.
That's and, a nuisance.
No,
like, that...
But
you know,
but my point is like there's people
that
are raising that money.
Award,
there's people. There's a lot of people that are raising money for him. And I would say that I wouldn't begrudge that because you know what? He's a comic book creator And, you know, if you want to support comics and guys that do that, that's cool. He's in a bad in his luck. And anybody that's in that in any field, you know what? If you can help out your fellow man, I'm all for it. I wouldn't begrudge people giving him money. I really wouldn't. Because he's in a bad place.
Yeah.
With or without this, he's in a bad place. If he's got 17,000 off 10, yeah, that's not good. So I would definitely say that people should give him money if they can, because he's just a man who's not doing well.
I'm broke. Give me some money.
Well, no.
That's the root.
The problem is it's gotten so much industry headwind, mm-hmm. like on both sides of it. Like as you said before, the Tyus Hamilton thing, the Sean Murphy thing. One person I don't want to name names, but it's a guy who does a fair amount of Marvel cover art. I follow him on Twitter. He's a great artist. He's come down on both sides of this issue, and he's come down hard.
Oh, come on, you have to tell us.
What, Dave Johnson? Okay. I love the guy's work.
He's a loud guy, period.
Yeah,
this is just a tragic story all around. There's no winners, you know, it is what it is. There's just nobody that, you know, it's one of those stories where I read it and I don't feel good about it at the end of it. It's a guy that's like I said in the beginning, this guy went for a Hail Mary pass. He's at the end of his rope. Did he get there on his own? I don't know. Debatable, whatever. But the bottom line is that there's just no winners in this situation. I wish the guy had the ability to generate his own his own money, but he doesn't, so it is what it is.
Yeah, it's kind of all around just a very sad
story.
It's
been a grimy week in comics, in my opinion.
Yeah.
So,
a segue.
Two.
Adventure Time number one was amazing.
There you go. I was going to say, really best thing you've read lately.
I love it. It was so much fun.
I sold out while I was in Dallas.
Did you really? It's a great book.
Guess how many people asked for it?
You sold out
Take a guess. I think how many
sold
people
out
asked for it?
Thursday. Four.
Zero.
No one asked
for it. So how many copies of a cartoon book
aimed
that nobody asked for do you order?
This is one of those cartoons
sold out of that. And Conan.
Conan was really? A surprise.
You sold out of Conan on
Adventure Time.
Only, yeah, Conan, I sold six copies of Conan for the last 5 years. So
you should have asked.
I thought I was pretty safe on my number of.
If you would
have
asked me, I would have told you buy Adventure Time. And here's why: at New York Comic Con, their presence was giant, and the fact that there was so much crossover between actual adults and
but just
this,
the fact that nobody asked for.
I know.
So the message, listeners, is pre-order books that you're interested in.
Or even tell me, pre-order, tell me, hey, I'm excited about this Adventure Time that you see in the previews.
It was zero feedback. I reread it. After I read it. It was just awesome. It was a lot of fun.
I still haven't read the backup story yet, but I like the first
story.
The
art's crazy.
Oh, yeah. it was very different. I know.
Did you catch the little bottom lines of, like,
yes, text? I thought that was hilarious.
Was it funny?
Throughout the entire book, there's just this really light green text in the white space at the bottom of the page, and it's just random stuff that, like, there's one panel that has this sign that says, like, deepest, darkest, evilest hole you could ever fall in, ever. And then under that sign, there's a sign that says, I make these signs for a living, call me. And then in the green panel at the bottom, it says, if we had space, we would have had another sign that said this. And I was like, really? This is complete insanity.
It's almost like the bottom text read like the artist was riffing on, like, fun things about, like, what he was drawing, what he was thinking about.
Yeah.
It was just, like, an all-ages fun book that was really
cool. The other interesting thing about Conan, though, is going back to our other point.
Wait, what?
You sold out of Conan.
Adventure Conan time.
I did. Okay.
Going back to your the prior that. Conversation, yeah. You probably sold more because it was Brian Wood.
Of course.
Oh,
Brian
course.
Wood. But it was one of those.
Yeah. Beckett Clunan, yeah.
You know, I have more. Luckily, it's Dark Horse, so I was able to get more.
Yeah, I love Beckett Clunan, but she's not a huge.
Northlanders, how many of those did you sell normally on a monthly basis?
Probably more. Probably in the 13 to 14 range. But there's not always.
The carryover.
You're not going to all automatically carry over. But going back to Adventure Time, I'm sitting there with Ross Ritchie, the owner of Boom.
Yeah.
He's like, yeah, we're going back to our fourth print. I'm like, dude, I can't order your stuff. I'm here. You know, it's sold out since I've been here. How could I have ordered a second print and a third
there
print?
There was nine,
you know?
Covers.
Yeah.
That was ridiculous. Like,
exactly. So I see that and I go, no.
That was ridiculous.
My friend Chris, actually, he got tapped to do one of the covers, and that was... Yeah. That was amazing for him. Chris Hale, he does Let's Be Friends Again.
He covered seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, 7 and 9.
Cover G.
Get it?
Sean, what did you read you liked?
Oh, my God. I got the artist edition Amazing Spider-Man John Romita.
Amazing.
Mine's currently on the shelf because I got in two, one for me, one for the store, and one for the store sold within, about 2 hours? So I'm like, we'll see if anybody else wants this because I really don't need it.
Yes, you do.
I want it. Again,
no, you but need
I
don't it.
Need it. I read it.
My daughter and I had a wonderful time sitting down. She was very excited with a giant Spider-Man book.
Wow. Yeah, it was very cool. I just wish it was consecutive. And did you see the big announcement? Well, not out of Comics Bro, but that they did announce at Comics Bro was the Mazzucchelli Miller Daredevil Born Again Artist Edition.
I heard you hit the ceiling when
I
read that.
I just went, stop.
I have every Artist Edition they've released.
Nope. Yeah.
Keep going.
Wow, that's one to get.
Because I even got the Rocketeer.
I don't know if you want to share this with your daughter as much.
Yeah.
The Rocketeer one?
No. The Rocketeer's fine. Born Again.
Born Again.
Some hookers die.
Yeah.
First issue's a doozy.
She's the only three-year-old in preschool who knows who Big Barda is.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
What else? I know you got a list.
Oh.
Hit your list, man.
Hit my list.
We're blowing time, whatever.
Back. My flashback was I finished the Death of the Reverse Flash run from the Flash 323 to 330.
Where'd you get those?
I got a couple from you, a couple online, because we do sell back issues here at Pittsburgh Comics.
Yes, we do.
Who was the creative team? Was it Messer Lopes?
It was Infantino.
Oh, Infantino. Oh, yeah.
And I can't.
Gary
Garney? I don't know. The
Cary Bates.
Cary Bates. Oh, I love Cary Bates Flash.
But people talk about decompressed storytelling now. Holy smokes. It took four issues for Superman to give his thumbs up, thumbs down as to whether the Flash was going to be kicked out of the Justice League. So that was the new issue of Shade, Darwin Cook's the beginning of his arc. So actually, because we were joking around at the beginning, I was like, I don't know if I'm a fan anymore because I only buy weeklies of Amazing Spider-Man and Shade, and that's it. Everything else is all trades now. Although, I lied. Sacrifice issue.
I don't know where to get it. I go to the website and it doesn't have anywhere to order it. And you can't get it from a distributor. You've got to order it direct. So I'm having trouble finding it. I know what it is. I don't know how to get it.
I'll bring you some.
Okay. Well, bring me one and maybe it'll have something in there just for me to find out how to contact
it. But it was funny because I read the trade of Red Wing in the same 2-day period and they both...
Red Wing's a quick, fun read.
Yeah. But I was just like, okay, what's going on with the Aztecs? And yeah. So I was like... Because Sacrifice is very heavy.
2012,
yeah. I mean, there was the Mayans, but they were neighbors.
But that Red Wing, you really need to be, like, stoned and have a good understanding of quantum physics to really understand that.
Is that Hickman?
Hickman. Yes. Yeah, Hickman is 2012's Grant Morrison.
So the funniest thing I got talking to Jeremy about how he ruined Incredible Hulk for Sean... And he said he was so excited that he was in his...
Yeah, thanks, Jeremy.
That Doom was in his FF costume, at which point I went, his what? Because I had no idea that Dr. Doom was part of the FF.
Kind of, sort of.
Yeah. So
he's in every other book.
I couldn't understand why he was white instead of green, but that then made sense and made me, again, not want to read it.
Doom's in too many places at once right now.
Yeah.
Penn's game's over.
I like how being in the FF means you get a very 2-1 stain...
Yeah,
easily stainable costume. How does that work?
But
why white?
Unstable molecules.
It's unstable molecules, exactly. Yeah, it's like self cleaning. Exactly.
So he gave Doom unstable molecules. That's going to end well.
They'll do well with that. There'll be time traveling molecules soon.
Ryan.
Oh, well, I've been enjoying Journey to Mystery a lot lately.
Putty buck, buck, buck. Is that a McLaughlin group?
Yeah. No, it was after you had mentioned that Bleeding Cool article. Where I think was Johnston,
the one where they were comparing Journey to Mystery to
Oh, okay,
yeah,
okay.
That one. Yeah. And
which I went really.
Yeah, that's I read that random. And I was like, "What?" And now I haven't read all of Sandman either, but I was like, "Okay,
what?
You're saying it's no." Oh, I'm sorry, I'm gonna get killed now. Oh, now I have to leave the podcast. Dang.
Karen Berger said,
"No, but I figured I'd give it a try, and I'm really, really liking it. And it's really funny because I know the gist of what happened in Fear Itself, but reading this book, I feel like I don't even need to go." Find out what happened in Fear Itself, but the other thing that I'm liking...
There was a snake,
was death,
and it died somehow.
Something happened.
I'm enjoying the story more, getting bits and pieces of it, as Loki doesn't even know what's all going on at the same time, so I like that. But the thing that I think I'm enjoying the most about it is that, you know, I'm pretty far behind on this series. I think there's 10 or 11 issues of Gillen's run out already, so I decided, let's just make this a weekly book. I think a long time ago I'd mentioned how I love weekly books. So I'm that far behind. I might as well just pick up an issue.
Even Trinity?
And, I did not read Trinity.
Well, if you want
that's
to.
Why you like this.
If you want to, they're a 10 for a dollar right there.
Hey, the they're run. At least a quarter, man.
You can get the whole run for $5.
Wow. Well, it is Kurt Busiek, and I'm a sucker for Busiek.
I have them bound in two,
what, you leave
yeah, two hardbacks.
You're not even going to say what your favorite read of the week?
I don't like comics.
You don't
like
okay, fine.
But, is that the name of the podcast?
We don't like comics. Yeah.
We're only gonna
sue everyone. I don't like comics.
TV shows and other stuff. No, but... If no one's, I know it's really kind of a stupid thing, but I mean, if you've ever been into a series and you need to catch up on it, just do like one a week. I think it's really cool. I mean, I know these are mostly designed to be monthly books, but I love getting something every week that I can look forward to.
Yeah, we all.
Wolverine the X-Men.
Oh yeah.
Nice. And it's,
so you were fine with the Nick Bradshaw?
I haven't read it before yet.
Yeah. It didn't bother me too much.
It was
much.
The same flavor. It's yep. just it looks a little different. I mean, it looks a lot different. But it's fairly jarring for the eyes, but that said it's that, the same exact fun. The tone's the same. It's still fun. It's still the characters that he created that I still want to read more than I care about Wolverine or Kitty Pryde. Like I want to read all of those, you know, fun new characters.
You're like Krakatoa or whatever.
Yeah, give me some more brew.
I remember looking at the Bradshaw character designs on the internet, and I fell in love with them. Like, it's very rare for me to like something X-Men, and that's a terrifying thing to say at this table. But, he came really well with it, and it's amazing.
Yeah, it's like... It's. I mean, obviously, Bocello is an acquired taste, and those who have that taste, like myself, like I really, I like Bocello. I like Scotty Young. I like Jim Mahfood. Like I like that style of like out there, long, like thick black lined, you know, street art inspired stuff. But you know what? I like Ed McGuinness. I like, you know, I like the cartoony stuff, and this is something different. And again, it's still. I think the reader of the last four issues reads this. It's still going to send the same fun.
Yeah, it had the same tone.
Yeah.
Which to me was the most important thing.
For sure.
And, you know, it's like we were saying, the new characters, like Brew is great.
Warbird.
That
this is kid, great.
Yeah, the Kid Gladiator, you know, like we were saying on Saturday just a little bit, you know, the whole fact that, you know, Gladiator's powers are based on confidence, and then here in this issue...
He's upset about a white blood cell.
Yeah, he's like, confidence is shattered, and does he have, you know, the implications of that?
It was awesome.
It was fun.
Okay, go away.
Jim Mahfood, did you pick up Marijuana Man?
Yeah.
That was a crazy...
He's living it.
All his stuff is he's gotten so off mainstream, which is okay. You know, his stuff's really crazy. Like, I have all the 40-ounce comics, and I have, you know, two different commissions from him, and I have some pages from him. I love John Mahfood. Who else?
Sean.
What are you liking?
What do you like? Some you read recently you like.
Give us a positive review.
Well, first I would have said Hulk, but, you know, since it was ruined for me, I didn't really like
fair
it.
Enough. Fair enough.
Now, monthly comics...
Doesn't have to be monthly. Mine's a trade, so...
Yeah.
Mine actually is two trades that I've read recently. One that... You disappointed me the other day talking about it being canceled, but Green Wake.
I don't know so much canceled, just being ended early.
Canceled.
Yeah.
It's canceled.
Because it was boring.
It was great.
I love the first trade. After that, I would say it's gone downhill. The story's kind of pointless. It was really designed...
How do you really feel? Wow.
It's only pointless.
The first story was awesome. Like, it had a point, and it was supposed to be a 6-issue mini.
Is it a point one?
No. But the book had good success, and I think they just renewed it because the initial story had success, but I don't think the second arc was fully thought out. And I just think that shows in 7 and 8, whatever else came out. But
yeah, I've only read the first trade, and I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Maybe stop there.
The first trade is phenomenal.
And the other one is Sweet Tooth Volume 4.
Okay.
Sweet Tooth is just an amazing book. Lemire writing it, and specifically when it's his art also, it really clicks.
Cool. Adam.
I picked up
nothing.
A few things,
Adam
liked
nothing.
Really, well,
just originally,
one thing I picked up
week.
That
but you didn't read.
I've been getting into because I just kind of caught up on the show is Walking Dead. And I know we talked about that a lot already, but...
Issues or just the show?
I wanted to talk
of what,
issues.
Both. What? Oh, what do
what
you
issues
when they
you?
Killed Rick, it really surprised me. Oh, you didn't get there yet. Sorry.
I like when all the Frankensteins come out.
So does that whole... So can I ask a question about issue 75? Because that's far enough back. That's not a spoiler. Have you read up that far?
No.
Oh. Well, there's a part where it goes color. I don't even talk about what goes
on. That was one issue. That was a backup story in one issue. No.
No. Okay. Because that really... Because I keep waiting for that.
No. That was them being
safe. Thank you.
Nick, do you want to go first?
No, I already Adventure Time and Wolverine.
Oh man,
I'll go if you're not ready.
Yeah,
okay, go ahead.
Oh, whatever. No, I finally to make you guys happy.
Oh, this is a big announcement.
There we go.
Big
announcement.
I read House of M on the plane.
No. Was it good?
No more mutants.
You know, it was. It was good, but I wouldn't call it epic. It was a good story, and it sadly set a precedent that Marvel has so locked onto and won't give up, where I know it had spin-offs. I only had the main book. But, like, reading it, there wasn't enough Spider-Man in it. There wasn't enough to tell you why he was so upset at the end. There was just a little brief mention, and it was one of those, I know there was more to this, so I could go and read that story if I want.
That's such a different reading experience than I had. Obviously, I read every book as it came out.
See.
And yeah, that's interesting. Like, I mean... So you're saying that they don't really tie, or they don't.
Well, it shows when Layla
Miller. Spider-Man miniseries that coincides with it is crazy.
Cool. Yeah.
Well, what happens?
I have it.
What happens is Layla Miller shows up. You see him. He's with Gwen and the babies, and Emma says, go play in the park," and he walks away. And then at the end, no, I'm so upset. And they didn't explain why he was so upset than...
Because he didn't have Mary Jane and the kids anymore, and he still remembered that.
Well, no, he had Mary Jane, Gwen. But it was Gwen. But it was like, I wanted more of that. So I can see why they're doing that, but now they've just made it so much where,
everything
this character showed up once, you must want a 7-issue mini about him. And they've just totally, you know, really need Fear Itself the Deep to explain one,
about Fear Itself. Spider-Man, they didn't really show anything that would explain that. It was actually, if I could say anything was about the mini for Spider-Man, it wasn't... It was kind of like if the story went on without them collecting him, because it kind of led up to like a surprise ending, which I don't want to say.
Okay.
Because it was a good book. I really thought that of all of them.
But I was reading them all as they came out. Yeah. So for me, it was like, oh yeah, I know exactly what they're referencing. But I hadn't imagined like reading it a couple years later and then reading just the mini, like what that would be like. But
you can avoid House of M, Iron Man.
Oh, I'm not reading anymore.
Like some mechs.
But I got that one. That's off my list. Now I just have to read Morrison's X-Men and I'm good.
One that I enjoyed from House of M.
Some of the Decimation stuff was good too. I'm sorry, Adam.
No, that's okay. One that I really kind of enjoyed. I think it was just a one issue. Might have had two issues. Was the Captain America one.
Where he was an old man.
Yeah, that was kind of neat. Where they showed up and said, no, we're going to leave
him. And they kind of go back and he's like...
I like Layla Miller now more than that.
Bucky.
As a child.
Well, now, did you read the last... you didn't read the last X-Factor. Okay.
Bucky kind of...
so it's good, huh?
It's good.
The Captain America House.
Are those trades available here?
They are, but I'm talking about the new issue that just came out today.
Is that available here?
It is. I should have it on the show.
Go ahead, Adam.
You have to read Sean.
The Captain America book, though, I think it kind of throws off the whole Bucky Barnes thing because I think he's in it and he's like an older man.
Yeah.
So I don't think they thought that through before writing that book.
They made a curve after that.
Yeah, it was good, but there were a lot of holes that maybe were filled elsewhere, but in the story itself, you're kind of like...
Well, they're going to write a prequel to it later.
They already did. Yeah. They already did a...
The Avengers. Well, that was good.
I liked that, having not read House of M. I enjoyed House
of M.
That's what I was
imagining. I forgot that you...
Yeah. But I liked it. But I did like how on the very last page they show the Earth, and then there's a picture of the Earth with a flame behind it. It's like, oh, so this is actually 7 or 8 or 9 or 12 years in the making. Like,
so you can't see like where AVX is pulling from Disassembled and House of M.
I can see that now.
Do you know what the flame in the Earth is, though?
No.
It's the new Avengers.
It's the Phoenix Force coming back.
It's the new Avengers story. Came out.
What's his name?
The Collective,
yeah.
Yeah.
Oh.
And he shows up in Alaska, kills the...
So that's not the Phoenix, so that's not tying in.
No, it wasn't. It said all energy goes somewhere.
Right.
And all that mutant energy went to him.
Okay.
Yeah. Killed Alpha Flight.
And Zorn, don't forget
Alpha Flight.
They came back.
Didn't they come back? Didn't they get better?
It was Omega.
They got better.
Was it Omega Flight?
Yeah, it was Omega. It was terrible.
Okay, so what do you read lately that you like?
I've got two new ones. I've got one old one. The two news are Prophet
by Brandon Graham. I'm trying to think of the artist's name, but
I read it. I didn't understand what the hell
was going on. Oh, it's crazy cool. I was
loved
in.
It. I'm yeah, in. I loved every, like, I love Brandon Graham just as a fact. Like, that's dead
didn't
stuff.
Didn't you sell out of that?
But I got it back in Second Prince came out today.
The only reason why I didn't buy it at the shop that I usually go to is because the only thing they had was the Liefeld variant, and I did not want any part of that.
Do you know what? I used to read... I used to read the Liefeld and Stephen Platt Prophet. Youngblood number 2, first appearance.
They were,
They hey,
were
Glory weird. Came out, and I might even have the. Oh, I don't know. I have the Liefeld variant.
Tell me if anybody remembers this. Wizard did a Prophet poster in the 90s with so many bullet shells that you had to guess how many or count how many bullet shells there were to get a prize.
They would.
Yeah.
1994, everybody.
But then the second new thing, I love what. I love everything that's happening in Francis Manapul's Flash. Absolutely everything.
It's really cool.
It is.
It's funny because I didn't like the previous one. I thought the art was static and everything, but this new one,
it's just,
dude, I think it's fantastic. It's him doing writing and art, and that's made all the difference, like in the layouts and everything.
Yeah.
And, like, his style is so kinetic.
He's taking a little J.H. Williams to some of it, but not completely, but there was one panel, it was in either issue 1 or 2, where it showed him running around the world. And it was a big picture of him running, and then in the trail was him visiting Africa. It was just the way he set up that page.
It's a really unique book.
Yeah.
And something that I like about that book, because that's been a pick of mine a couple of weeks, is how there's been weird stuff sprinkled throughout that they're eventually getting to explaining.
He's building a tapestry.
Yeah, the first time they showed Trickster in the desert with all those tanks, I was like, what? Why? And then you know, at the end of the last issue, they're like, "Yeah, you're making lots of problems in the time stream. Stuff's just popping up everywhere. Stop it!" I was like, "All right, I'm in. I'm
Where's
in
Wally?
Switch your old.
Yeah.
The old. Oh man, you're not gonna like me for this, but I. Okay. Well,
not
actually,
judgmental.
No. It's comics. It's a
mind comp.
Yeah, it's that.
Nobody would like that.
The graphic novel.
They just released. Like, I work at the Warhol, and they they just had the Alex Ross exhibit, and it shames me. It shames me to say that I haven't read the full entirety of Earth X.
What?
And
I've never read.
It's tough to get into.
Once
you get going.
Exactly. Once you get going with Earth X, oh man, like all the connections they make.
It's crazy.
Yeah. It's ridiculous.
And then the second one expounds on it even more.
Yeah.
That makes the first one seem so insignificant.
Rabbit hole.
Is it Earth X, Universe X, and then
Paradise? Stop.
Paradise X.
Stop.
There is a Paradise X.
No,
if you
Paradise X is actually where I started.
Oh, what?
That's where I started.
So it just got getting
like, as a kid, like I read Paradise X. I'm like, this is so weird that I can't help but get into it.
Yeah, I mean, from an Alice in Wonderland perspective, what's going on?
Yeah.
Hey, isn't that a series that Marvel kind of did like, hey, let's do Kingdom Come, but here?
Yeah,
that's basically, like, they just gave Alex, they saw the success of Kingdom Come, they just let Alex Ross do whatever the hell he wanted.
I might have to check that out.
I mean, the only thing that's weird about it from a crazy continuity fan is, like, the devil is Nightcrawler and Colossus is Sinister, but whatever.
Yeah, well,
that threw me for a
loop. Makes sense,
like,
because, like, they just started...
The visuals.
Ross started making connections, like, to Mephisto.
Yeah, and Price said, here's my drawings. Make a story with this.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly.
Banner is a little guy on top of a big ape. Yes, go!
Some of the interpretations.
That's all the Dynamite Entertainment.
That's true. I never really thought about EarthX again since I read it when it came out.
Yeah, I read that when it came out in issues. Yeah. And then I think Paradise, I think I did.
Got a little weird.
Yeah.
But that's how I did the Crisis.
Or no,
Crisis
University.
Would you read Final Crisis first?
I had
actually,
a kid.
Yeah.
Did you really?
I had a kid just buy Final Crisis, and I'm like,
his head
you're just coming into this. This.
Please show me your PhD in DC.
You
want me
to write them the notes? I'll write them
you have a PhD in DC, forget it.
And then I read the Identity one, and then finally went back and read
Crisis.
Oh,
here's
an
inspiration.
I'm proud to know that none of those exist anymore.
Grant Morrison books.
Or do they?
I want to see what the absolute Final Crisis is like. I'm very intrigued.
We'll see.
You said that they didn't exist.
There's a Watchmen.
It's not every mini or anything. Though.
Well, yeah.
If we had more time, I'd balk at some of the Earth 2 costumes, but I'm not going to.
Oh, I'll talk about it.
Oh, yeah.
Daredevil was great. When they finally revealed who Daredevil was, that was genius.
Oh, you're still talking about Earth.
Oh, sorry. No, I'm talking about like
DC Earth 2.
Yeah, Earth 2. Okay. They just released the characters for it.
Okay. So excited for that.
And
I was not until I saw that cover.
I hate everything they've done from a character design perspective. I really do, and it's just it's because I've come from a school of like, if you're designing a character, it's Kyle Baker thing. I love Kyle Baker, and I've
Deadpool match. Just one of my favorite
like,
books right now.
His big thing with character design in How to Draw Stupid was it has to be automatically recognizable, and a 5-year-old has to be able to draw it. Which all the costume designs are just that's what they are. And like they
too busy.
Yeah, a little bit too busy.
Okay, Batman's busy. Batman's got his scallops and his fins.
Yeah, Batman's got like the
Superman's.
He's got like the London collar and the ablative plating. I don't understand anything about
that. Sean, would your 5-year-old recognize Hydra Bob in Deadpool match?
Gorilla Bob.
I was going to say Gorilla Bob.
I was like, who's Hydra? He's cut off 1/8 hand and
Avengers and any of the superhero squad we're good with.
Yeah, like all the iconic stuff, but like. And also, I take issue with the Power Girl thing.
You like the Window?
I like the Window because the Window made sense in the Amanda Connor run. It really did. She made that happen. She made that character better because of the Window.
Was that Jeff Johns that wrote?
Yeah, it's Jeff Johns. Jeff Johns, Amanda Connor. Because
it's a distraction.
No, because
that's a better reason.
That was from Jeff Loeb's Superman Batman.
But that's a better reason.
Yeah, I love that reason.
Then I couldn't figure out what to put there.
What it is that. It made her so flawed as a character because that's why there's nothing there. She's supposed to be a part of the House of El, but she doesn't feel like she belongs there.
That's interesting.
And like she, so she,
her shield is missing.
Yeah. So that's the reason
it a circle?
The Window.
It should have been a
drone. He did kind of the missing piece thing, and like I agree, I like what he did with that, but it does seem kind of.
I don't know.
I think because it's contrived with boobs, that
makes
it a little.
Okay, well, hang on.
That was the best betrayal that just came out. Big picture of the boob saying
same
old
exact
friends.
Outfit. I'm like, this is Ashley Banfield, CNN News, last week.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
So she's Power Girl.
But that's in the red S&M outfit, and there's actually a dog collar on top.
And I've already previously mentioned, I hate being a guy that's a comic fan that's like, I like the boob Window because it makes sense from a story.
I can justify this.
Yeah.
I can justify this.
I will agree with you on that costume because I didn't notice, for anyone who hasn't seen it, she kind of has this red collar thing, and then just right here, there's these two little yellow triangles.
Yeah, that looks terrible.
And I didn't notice it until I thought maybe they just forgot to put the triangles on this side. But it doesn't look like it.
Are they the really high collars? Like,
no.
No, it's
her too.
She's not in that club.
Colors.
And like, did anybody else think like when they did Earth 2, they're like, yeah, they're gonna bring back some classic costumes. Are they gonna like have stuff that was like relevant in the 50s? Nope, all 90s. Boom. Here you go.
90s all the time.
It is Jim Lee and
I'm trying to think like Kevin Maguire did something about it. I don't know. It's weird.
When they first announced it, I was hoping and praying that it was just gonna be the previous pre-Flashpoint continuity.
Exactly.
But I don't know. I mean, this
what?
Colin's grabbing at the.
No, I'm just looking.
Because
we just hit the 2-hour mark. Congratulations.
What?
Oh, man. Did I bring something into the mix that I shouldn't
have?
No, it's
chunky cast.
I mean, now, my prediction on the Earth 2 book, now that we've seen this variant cover where, you know, Batman's fighting with Astromech sticks, Wonder Woman's got what looks like the Dark Stars logo on her headdress, it looks like little stars in her hair. That can only imply to me that Earth 2 Justice Society might be made up of the legacy characters Dick Grayson, Donna Troy. That's
it's a new Earth 2 concept. Let's give it that.
Oh, man. That.
I was just so hungry for Alan Scott and Jay Garrick. I know.
Yeah, I agree.
Of course, Chris.
Yeah.
It sounds a little
free. Chris's favorite. Yeah, I know.
No,
I was just hungry. But Chris's favorite character is Jay Garrick.
Jay Garrick, Ted Grant, all that stuff.
Like
Starman
is my favorite DC book.
But like
of all time.
And I was really disappointed that they weren't like they might still bring them back, but it's not I don't know.
Well, maybe they'll have like 10 Professor X's to like be their mentors. They'll just be like, hey, I need to learn how to run fast. I'm gonna go talk to Jay real quick. And
I guess.
But I need to learn how to punch stuff, so I gotta go talk to Ted.
There's
I thought we were
gonna
get
sigh,
some
but,
you know
characters. Well, knowing James Robinson though, I mean he always does his flashback stuff, so maybe we'll get some flashback to the previous Justice Society.
Which James Robinson are we gonna get? Are we gonna get Starman James Robinson, or are we gonna get the Cry for Justice
James
Robinson?
We talked about this on the podcast. Like we really feel that there's a good chance that
James Robinson, without a lot of crossovers and all that stuff, is going to be doing some good stuff. But if you force him to go into the regular continuity, that's when he starts to, like, you know,
Justice League of Two Worlds,
angry.
Shade's been good.
Yeah. Shade's been great.
I enjoy Shade. I'm just,
and I've never read Starman. Go ahead.
No, I also,
no, I will. That's fine. Yeah. It's a huge mistake.
And see, that's the thing. I haven't read Starman. But
I mean, you're wrong.
The only Robinson stuff I read was when he came on with New Krypton.
Oh boy!
Yeah, and that's I know that's a bad jumping on point, but I kind of got soured on reading James Robinson. So
I can totally understand that.
That and but Cry for Justice.
Did you guys talk last week about the
personal
the Flashpoint series that's coming?
I heard about it, but we didn't talk about it.
I'm actually, because we had talked at the end when we were, you know, like our favorite miniseries from the Flashpoint, we were all talking about the Batman one, right?
Yeah.
So, and then they announced there's going to be a flashback series. So
that's good.
Is that going to go back? So are we going to get a chance to see
something. So I don't know where I saw the Bleeding Cool Man.
there was a rumor.
There was so much potential Flashpoint. There really was.
You know what? I think that was someone LI fanboy was saying that. That would be a cool idea. Maybe they did announce it. I don't know.
Oh, the Wally West thing?
Sorry, go on.
They did. Yeah. They introduced a lot of good concepts with Flashpoint, and you read through them. But, like, the Shazam stuff, the set of kids mm-hmm. with the tiger, that's something I was like, yeah, I want to see what happens there.
I want to read that all day long.
Yeah, of course. I would love that. Like, I'd love, like, seven little kids. Like,
I like Captain Planet so much.
Yeah. They all, like, transformed into this one dude.
No, I don't want to hear it. We're not talking all about Captain Planet, Adam.
Yeah.
Remember when Mr. Belding...
No! No!
Yeah, like, oh, man. Like, everything except for, I don't know, the Batman stuff, like, yeah, it was good until, you know...
Yeah.
This got weird. But, oh, man, also Curse of Shazam. I sort of want to talk about that, but I'll do that at a later point because I've got opinions. Opinions with a capital O.
But I'm interested in that backup story, but yeah. I'm not as interested in the main story of Justice League. So
I'd rather read that than Justice League. I get it. They're the Justice League. Let's move on.
I have friends that swear by that. Swear by just...
Do you know what I mean? Little team of superheroes.
I swear.
I understand.
I get this.
It's so painstakingly slow. You guys are your friends. You fight crime.
Here's some dark side.
Jeremy's brought up this point, too, when I've talked about this book, because it's definitely one of my least favorite books of the relaunch, but Jeremy's opinion is that always, you know, this is, and he's right, I think, is that this is the mainstream book. If they're going to market this book to any non-comic reader, it's going to be Justice League.
It's pretty.
So, it is.
I'm not even a fan of Gene Smith.
Exactly. But like, there was so many
jumping the shark early, though.
So many hit and miss with the 52, but the big hits were... Big hits like Swamp Thing, and Animal Man.
Swamp Man, I'd read that.
Animal Man,
that's a TV show. Swamp Man,
that'd be great.
Dude, the stuff that Lemire and Snyder are doing with Swamp Thing and Animal Man are just insane and awesome. It's unprecedented. It's the best 1-2 punch I've read in the past, like, maybe 3 or 4 years.
That's crazy. I remember the Wednesday we all came in, and we were like, look at this page in this book, and then look at this. Oh, wait a second. We were all very excited.
By the way, last night I watched Swamp Thing, the animated series.
Oh, man.
I saw you posted that.
It doesn't hold up. It never held up.
I saw the movie.
Great theme song. The Adrian Barboa.
I saw the live-action movie somewhere that was, like, for $5.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Cool. I think we've hit our maximum load, and we'll wrap this up.
Way to have the happy ending reference.
Maximum force achieved.
Okay, we'll be editing this one. Later.
Come on.
It was all a dream. I used to read Wizard magazine. Marvel versus DC. I don't want to fight no more, y'all. Check this out right here. I was raised in a small southern community. People used to look at me different because I look different. But the song ain't about race, it's about lines in the sand that we draw to keep on producing any hatred. And internet culture only took away the faces for when we had to say it. Negativity and cynicism took the world over. I rode my bike and grabbed my backpack and hold it over my shoulder and went down.
down to the comic book store with a copy of Me Against the World bumping. I spent my $10 and learned to love the elements that made me feel so relevant. I niche a place to feel something. And I grew up thinking once I was better. And I ignored tradition, thinking how the story could shepherd me through the gateways of seeing a world that lay beyond the racks that spun at the front next to the register. And all I hear is Marvel versus DC. And all I see is a sea of people like me. And all I feel is the hate in their voices, ignoring the choices life has given you and me. And all I hear is Marvel this and DC that. And all I see is a sea of people at my back. If you're trying to stop with all the naysaying, then Adam Warlock is here to keep the tape playing. I made fun of the big guns, the breasts, the muscle bearing chests, absurd jackets and outfits. Each saga and death, the funerals and the time spent with secrets comic creators kept. I was a zombie walking around in a daze. I was a fan with crises on the way. And I still remember back when mom and dad would fight. I'd read a comic and sketch to pass the day. I'm feeling better now, life is slower now. And I see that I can love it for what these pages say. And sure at times I'm frustrated, but great writing is dope. And sick ass art can be the saving grace. And that's whether it's Green Lantern or X-Men, Ghost Rider or Next Wave, the invasion I look through. So that's why when I rap, I try to talk about the things that bring us together the way that comic books do. And all I hear is Marvel versus DC. And all I see is a sea of people like me. And all I feel is the hate in their voices, ignoring the choices life has given you and me. And all I hear is Marvel this and DC that. And all I see is a sea of people at my back. If you're trying to stop with all the naysaying, then Adam Warlock is here to keep the tape playing. That was a good drum break. There ain't a thing that I can do about this black hole. We're all swimming in a dead pool of lost souls. Got more to chew on, sorta like a mind bender. A brainiac on the mic, that's why I stopped going back to the store. Cause the fans were like the walking dead. Just banshees screaming off all their talking heads. It's like they saw Spider-Man left like Batroc. Corporations face the price of shutting out the have-nots. And you can call them the Illuminati New World Order. Made a Franken castle like I told you. So strange, call a doctor, oh, dude, now they gotcha. Weak as Tony Stark when he's chilling out sober. I ain't no cat. Nova, I can't convince you, Mr. Sinister in your minds I can't get into. But if you wanna be a Superman, show me. Stop with all the pointless battles like Don Quixote.